This week, we're back from another round of conventions as we wind down the year, and how better than to come back to the imminent release of PlayStation VR with a healthy lineup of launch titles. We'll give you the wrap-up and the rundown of this and plenty more news, and it all starts right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight with episode number 660 for this October the 9th of 2016. My name is Rob Roberts, joining you live here from Sacramento, California, where we are headquartered, and here with me in studio, as he is every week. Say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I heard your Twitter got hacked today. What's up with that?
I don't know. That was weird. Yeah, there's some account posted on my thing, and I was notified about it like a few minutes later.
What were they spamming? Like,
I don't know. It was like trying to lure someone to click the link because with 60 pictures. But honestly, from my standards, sexy enough. There was no boobies there. I mean, there was lingerie, and that's classy, I guess. But I'm not a classy guy. So if someone's gonna hack it, then I better see like full frontal. come on, you wasted all this time to hack the password or something, and this is what you put up there. I mean, come on.
Don't waste my time.
I mean, that's just, it's stupid.
But you were on it and you fixed all right. But you said you had two-factor auth on your account, right?
Yeah, I had it because I turn it on whenever they add stuff like to these social networks. I always turn it on like day one, like, or whenever I first hear about it.
Okay, so that's supposed to make your account like an iron fortress. So that right. Did they get in through your computer?
Well, it was weird though because when I went to go and change the password, it was off. Two-factor was off. So I was like, well, weird. So they could, most of the time with these Twitter hacks and stuff, they just social engineer it. Or they even go to the extent of, like, cloning your phone and logging in with your mobile, which they didn't do that with mine, because why would you do that with mine? Really? I mean, come on, that's just stupid. But yeah, I saw a login attempt also on the VOG Minecraft one as well, which
interesting.
Also, that would just be absolutely pointless since I don't use it anymore, so... Who cares?
All right. Well, I'm glad you got everything fixed on your account and you took down the not so sexy pictures that somebody posted on your behalf.
it was disappointing. I mean, just. Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, not here tonight, of course, still on a break from the show, Dark Sakura, but we will be hearing from her later and during our classic game of the week, thanks to the magic of radio. Dark Sakura should be joining us. We're hoping she's going to be able to join us for a tape show in November. So still a little ways out, but we miss Dark Sakura. But thankful she can still be on the show, at least in part, through the classic game of the week. Coming up tonight on the show, we have an interview. Very excited to welcome Ryan from Retro Dreamer Studios, which is making the game Monsters and Monocles available right now on Steam Greenlight. Loki and I played this game like the first time a couple years ago.
Yeah,
one of the SAC Indie Arcade events. But this is, and you might think, indie game means, I'm not going to see a lot of it out there. But no, that's quite not the case with this game. I mean, not only is it on the Steam Early Access, but they have announced they're going to be on PlayStation 4 as well. And there's a lovely cut trailer that PlayStation has on their official channel.
Yeah, and I've seen some coverage on it in the media and stuff. And so it looks, I mean, it's a good game. It was good. Couple years ago, so.
Yeah. So excited to welcome Ryan here live in about 20 minutes or so. And if you guys have played the game and have any questions, or if you haven't played the game and you still have questions, you'll be able to ask those live in our chat room, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern at the Voice of Geeks Network, vognetwork.com. And if you are listening to our show, you can participate live with our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. And if you guys could do me a favor tonight, I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the real world outside this show. Thank you guys for choosing to listen to OLR live tonight or in podcast form. I appreciate you either way. But since I do have to read comments on the fly, try not to fill up the chat room with talk about politics tonight. There's other... You go to Twitter.
Politics? There's politics
Facebook.
Going on tonight?
Don't worry about it.
Is the Orange Ferret going to say some weird stuff again? Because I'm totally down with that.
Here's the thing. Next week on... Is it next week or the week after? I have to check our calendar, but I think it's next week on OLR. We actually have... Cat President, the developers of that game, are on the show. And I'll check the calendar during the break tonight and double check the week. But politics will be permissible when we're talking about President Cat. That's the only time you can break that rule. So thank you, guys. But we do have some on-topic comments here in chat from Bobby Blackwolf saying it might have been an authorized app that hacked. So if you had like something tied to Twitter.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to look at, but I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I think it's always a good idea to clean that stuff up once in a while, too. And the biggest offenders are those freaking quiz apps. Like, and I don't know if you even
do
this.
I don't do that.
Some people do, like the whole, which one of the mean girls are you?
And if it did any of that, that would be Facebook, because, you know, that's where normally you're taking quizzes. I don't do that on Twitter. Twitter is pretty lean, but
some of that shows up on Twitter. I know I've used some of those, like, track who follows and unfollows you on Twitter, just because, you know, if a lot of times people follow to inflate their number account or their follower numbers, and they immediately unfollow. So I do use one of those programs to kind of like catch those people. Because I'm pretty good about following people back, but if you're just a spam bot, I'm not interested in following
you. I like following celebrities, some celebrities that I like, you know, on TV and stuff. But if they post a lot or repost or, you know, forward a lot, I kind of have to take them off.
And then going to another real-world thing I want to address here real quick before we get into some games. Tiger Claw in our chat room over at live.vognetwork.com says, yeah, the whole week with Hurricane Matthew was uneventful for me. You put on the hurricane shutters and anticipating the storm only to find out it never touched down in South Florida. Well, I'm very thankful that didn't have an effect on you. I really hope our listeners in Florida have similar stories to what you have. So, you know, I was thinking of y'all this week because I know we've got a few listeners in Florida and that were in the area that could have potentially been impacted. So I'm really, I'm hoping you all have stories like Tiger Claw out there. So yeah, stay safe, you guys. So anyway, I think we want to start off tonight by getting into some of the news from last week that we missed with our kickoff topic tonight. First off, though, let me just kind of ask Loki, with no show last week. I mean, I'll talk about Gamer X here in a minute, which is where I was at. But how was your weekend off with no show?
It was never a weekend off, but it's just. I just went and played Ingress. I was going to do something like normally, like when I have a night off like that, I'll try to go see a movie or something, but there wasn't anything good planned at all. And it was just no. So I decided that I was going to probably just play Ingress, and I had actually more that I wanted to do. But I just didn't get it done. So I hung out with some of the people that are around here and, played a little bit Ingress on my way home, and that was it. Surprisingly, the time went by really fast. So
good deal.
But,
good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I was at GamerX. This is the fourth year of GamerX. Dark Soccer was there with me. We were staffing the Vogue table because we were a what do they call the intro level sponsor? Like eight-bit sponsor, I think we were. Voice East Network was. So we were there. Also, our pals Captain Spike and First Mate Slidekick from Game Buoy were there. Extifer from Guys on a Show was there. So there was, you know, a few shows on our network were represented there at GamerX. And if anybody is listening to OLR for the first time because they met us at the table, hello, and thank you for checking it out. Really appreciate it. Real quick, our show was friends that came together. We all used to play Dance Dance Revolution and music-based games at the arcade, and there was a real sense of community that was built around that. So we kind of took that community outside the arcade onto the internet, and that's the community that's kind of continuing today, even though we don't necessarily focus on music games per se. We certainly, you know, still have a great love of video games in general, especially niche things that other people miss out on sometimes. We really love here. So that's what OLR is all about. But with GamerX, you know, GamerX is a smaller convention. There's a big focus on panels. They do a lot of panels on things like diversity and visibility. And, you know, sometimes it's about kind of justifying why there needs to be a GamerX sort of thing, which, you know, I totally understand as a gay gamer myself. Representation and all that is important. It's really great to see people like yourself in video games. And that's why it's great that we have all these video games to kind of let you, you know, do, you know, BioWare games are infamous for this. They kind of let you do the game that you want to do. So they run a lot of panels, and they also, it's not just that, but also kind of encouraging people to develop, because one of the great ways to have representation in gaming is to encourage more minorities to develop, get out there, make a game. You know, I know I've had struggles of my own in making a game in the past, but if I had the time to really sit down and do it, I could make a game. Loki's been trying on and off over years to make a game.
I just mentally have just not been able to focus on anything, and it's really frustrating.
But if Loki can do it, you can do it. And so
GamerX, I'm trying. I'm I just
there's there's a really big theme about just trying to get more minorities to participate in the game making process. I'm not just talking about gays. I'm talking about, you know, non-binary individuals, transgender individuals, African Americans, Asian Americans, women. You know, I'm talking about like the GamerX is really speaks to, I think, a lot of different minorities out there. And, you know, again, I hate that this has to be said, but I feel like it does. The goal is not to eliminate the white man, the straight white man from video games. That is not the goal. The goal is to add more. That's what it is. You just add more. So, yeah, I feel like it's always the first thing I hear when there's a, you know, talk about GamerX is where's the straight white man game making expo? And it's like, you aren't unwelcome from GamerX. They, you know, if you bought a ticket, you get in. And you agree to follow the rules about no harassment and all that stuff, which any con would have. Anyway, back to the game. So there was a lovely expo hall, and we were in this hall, and they had some bigger companies were there, like Intel, which was doing this fun little like photo session, and they had some indie games that were running on Intel hardware that you could see at their booth. Oculus was there, which we talked about a little bit on last week's show, which was last time we did a show, which was interesting because of, you know, Oculus was going through their own struggles in the news a couple weeks ago, but they were there and they were showing off, you know, and I don't think any of the personalities with Oculus were there. You know, you certainly weren't going to see Palmer Luckey or Zuckerberg or anybody, but you
yeah,
know,
that would have been awkward.
They have their team that goes out and does these demos. So they were there, and, you know, so a lot of people got to try Oculus for the first time, which was cool. Let's see who else was like showing a game that was there. Blizzard was doing their job recruitment thing again. So, but there was a lot of indie developers too. Some of the same people I'd seen the year before were coming back, and they were either showing their game was about to be released, or they were working on a new game now, and they were kind of showing that again. So that was pretty cool. But I had a really good time. You know, it's just a fun show and a great crowd, and it's just a very different vibe from a lot of other gaming expos. Like, actually, something about GamerX just feels really relaxed and chill to me. Like, there's just something about it where it could just, like, if I could just kind of put my finger on why I really like a con like GamerX, they did a thing called the GamerX Slumber Party on Friday night. And all it was they just took one of their tiny rooms, and it was just a chill space. It was just chill. And I loved it because it was nothing. It's nothing disgusting or dirty or awkward or anything like that. It was just come hang out with nerds. And some guy was like, I ordered pizza. There's pizza in the back if you want some. And I actually met like a ton of new people just going to this thing and just chilling out. And everybody was just really cool. And, you know, we could instantly bond over nerdy things that we had in common. And yeah, it was just kind of, I hadn't really experienced something like that at any of the other cons I've been to. Not to knock the other cons. There's great things I take from every con, but that was something that felt very unique to GamerX. So yeah, did a lot of great networking with that. Big thanks to anyone that came out to our panel on Sunday. We had kind of a smaller room, so we couldn't fit a lot of people in there, but I had a good time, and I felt like the panel was well received by the group in there. And there was a lot of people in there who weren't actually listeners of any of our shows. They were just kind of curious about podcasting and all that and what it is. So yeah, hope some folks decided maybe they want to start their own show or enjoyed what they heard here. So there was that. And then GamerX teams up with MAGFest, and they actually had a lot of classic games there. They had a whole little arcade with DDR and the Star Wars arcade game I got to play a little bit. And one night until they closed, because they had to close the convention center space around midnight, I was playing Super Mario World.
See, you want to hear something funny, completely off topic here. But, yeah. So I just found out the other day that they've opened a classic arcade in Sutter Street. Uh-huh. Here locally in Folsom.
Really?
Yeah.
Like classic, like old school, like a coin-op type place?
Yeah, or? Like a coin-op type place. Huh. I thought that was weird. Yeah, it's like the Sutter Street Arcade or something like that.
Huh. I'll have to check that out,
yeah.
I just told some friends to go to CoinUp. Man, retro games are making a comeback, but that's okay. Who doesn't
but
love
yeah,
retro
games? I just thought it was interesting to see like an actual arcade opening up.
Our pal Bobby Blackwolf is in chat saying, I forget there are people that still have never heard of a podcast. Yeah, you know, there was a lot of people at GamerX. I kind of ran into the same thing. So I know Bobby was at Siege, which was a game developer conference type of thing in Georgia. He was there this weekend. And I was finding the same thing at GamerX. I was kind of thinking in the back of my mind, like, well, with NPR and stuff, everybody's probably heard of a podcast by now. But no, I found there was a lot of people I was kind of having to explain it to, like, the concept of what it is and why we do it. For me, I find that a lot of people, and this is what's getting harder and harder, a lot of people kind of want to know why would they listen to a podcast when they have YouTube and Twitch these days, which is an interesting issue that our podcasting community is facing.
Because YouTube has videos that people recorded a while ago,
right,
that you can watch as well.
Right.
Whereas we record audio,
right,
that you can listen to.
Right. And we're live. We're fortunate enough to be live. I mean, there's a lot of podcasts that aren't live that are still worth your time. But, you know, I also kind of tried to sell the thing that sometimes you can only have so many of your senses distracted. Like when you're watching a YouTube or something like that, that's typically all of your senses being used at once. But when you're doing a podcast, you can still, and I know I've had people say, the weeks that we don't do OLR, I'm bored Monday at work, which is a huge compliment to me. But they say, I listen to you guys at work while I'm doing my data entry job or my, you know, coding job or whatever it is, because they can look and think and type. You know, it's just the podcast only takes one of their senses. So that's kind of one way I try to kind of put the podcasting out there, is that sometimes you can't completely devote yourself to entertainment, but you can be entertained while you're doing other things.
That's like saying, why listen to the radio when you can watch videos on YouTube?
I know, right? But it was interesting, but it's one of those things where, like, these are things that I wouldn't hear from our audience.
Just, yeah.
If I was only to listen to the feedback from our audience, none of them are going to say, why should I listen to a podcast? Or what? Because they're already listening to a podcast, right? So these are the things that I get to hear.
Because you'll crash your car if you're watching a podcast. No.
So, anyway. That was Gamer X. It was a good time, a really chill 3 days. The only kind of downside was that the last day, and they know this, and there was really nothing they could have done about it, because they announced their expo long before the NFL announced their schedule. And the hotel where Gamer X was at was at the Hyatt, literally across the street from Levi Stadium, where they had the Super Bowl this year, right? So now the 49ers play there, and they were having their, I think it was their first game there against the Cowboys. And I wouldn't have known that normally, but it was everywhere. They were playing their game there, and I didn't realize how many people come to the hotel across the street from the stadium to watch the game. And so their bar was completely taken over by football people. Yeah, I thought that was weird too.
You're almost there. Keep going.
I know, like, why? I don't. So I don't know, but
it's like I'm almost. It's like I'm right there.
Maybe so they can
go home.
Maybe they can go join in the tailgate parties or something. Well, the Niners lost, so I don't know what parties would be done.
That's true. Tailgating would be nice.
Yeah, but anyway, it was unfortunately it caused some conflict, and I heard that a slur got hurled at somebody, which isn't very nice. But I did think it was kind of interesting because, when the football fans on the lower level would cheer and they would go, yeah, you know, whenever the, things would score, the tabletop gamers were on the mezzanine. So like the second floor. So somebody, and this all happened while the OLR or the VOG network panel was happening in the room. So we didn't see any of this, like, happening until we walked out and it was already going on. So what would happen is that the dude bros would cheer on the first level whenever something happened in the football game, and they go, yeah, and then everybody up on the second floor, yes. everybody just started going, yes. And it was just like, I died laughing the first time I heard that. So that became it was like the dueling cheers that would go back and forth, and I like cried from laughing so hard when that was going on. So, you know, it's unfortunate that the safe space that Gamer X tries to create got punctured a little bit with a very angry, drunken individual that said something that they really should not say at a convention dedicated to this. But, you know, I felt otherwise they did the Gamer X folks did the best job they could making lemonade out of lemons, so to speak. So anyway, that was Gamer X. I had a really good time. We're just a few minutes out from getting Ryan here to talk about Monsters and Monocles. So I'll do the last week's news here in a minute. Perhaps let me get to some comments from chat here as well over at live.vognetwork.com. Alan Alchemy in chat says, it was totally out of Gamer X's control, too. They can only police their own people in area. Yeah, and I think most people realize that. I think everybody that attended GamerX realizes that. Nobody faults the staff for that. But it's just one of those "it still sucks" kind of situations. And we, as soon as our panel was done and as soon as the expo hall closed, we realized the game would be over in about 30 minutes. So we hightailed it the fuck out of Santa Clara and drove home because we didn't want to be stuck in that traffic.
Oh, God, no.
And it was already getting pretty bad. So, you know, because they, for some stupid reason, they narrow it down to one lane. I think it's because that way they can keep the light green the entire time. I don't know. But it was just, oh, my God. So I couldn't imagine trying to leave there at like 4:30, 5 o'clock when it was going to get really ugly. So I felt bad that I couldn't really see GamerX through till the bitter end. So that wasn't really fair to them. But I did have to work on Monday. So anyway, let me quickly ask Loki, how was your gaming week before we give Ryan a call here?
Well, it was brief. So I played basically Ingress. And but I did actually play a console game. I played Cluster Trucks, which I've been looking forward to this game coming out for quite a while now. It's from an indie developer named Landfall Games. And the premise of the game is basically that you're hopping on the back of trucks to the finish line. And there's a lot of obstacles in the way. So trucks can be, you know, they're just kind of on their own AI. But there's like, you know, giant hammers, lasers, moving platforms, jumps, all sorts of crazy shit. And it's just kind of jumping from one to the other. And it gets really hard. And it's really fun. Because you can get going pretty fast. It's a very speed run centric game. So
yeah, you were recommending this to me before the show, saying if I like Super Meat Boy, I'd probably get a
right. Yeah,
of this right
I
here.
Mean, maybe it's not as hard as Super Meat Boy, but it's definitely, you know, challenging and fun because you die a lot, but it's like, you know, there's some cool stuff that happens too. So and you get power ups and stuff like that. So I'd highly recommend that. It's on PlayStation 4 and PC right now. I bought both because I was gonna play the PlayStation 4 version, and my wife wanted to watch TV, and I was like, damn it. So I'll buy the Steam version, and then I ended up watching TV because I'm weak. So
it's just Grey's Anatomy
but
is just
no,
so addictive.
I've played through quite a bit of it. I'm in like the seventh stage or seventh world, I guess, and each world has like 10 levels. So that's 7 out of 10 7 out of 8 levels that worlds that they've got. So it gets really challenging, though. Like my least favorite but most challenging was Laser World. Because there's one level, like, literally in the beginning, you're like, ah, fuck. Because it's just, all you see when you first start is all these lasers in the sky, and they're all swooped down. You're like, ah, shit. And it's just dodging lasers like crazy.
It sounds like that scene in Resident Evil that doesn't sound pretty at all. So, yeah. Yikes. All right, cool. All right, well, I'll tell you about my gaming week a little bit later, but we want to make sure we get Ryan here on the show, who's from Retro Dreamer and is one half of the team making the game Monsters and Monocles. And I believe we have Ryan on the line now. You there, Ryan?
I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, good. Welcome to Orange Lounge Radio.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem. It's always nice to support, you know, we're an indie podcast. We like to support indie developers, and it's even sweeter when the indie developer happens to be pretty much your neighbor. Because you're always...
Yeah, no, it's great, and it was great to meet you guys out at Indie Arcade. God, was that like 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. That was the first time we got to play Monsters and Monocles.
I've been making this game too long.
Okay, well, let's first off, before we get into the history of the game, let's talk a little bit about what the game is. So for those that don't know what Monsters and Monocles is, what's the pitch? What's the game in a nutshell?
Sure, it's a very kind of classical, like frantic, top-down twin-stick shooter, very much inspired by like old arcade games. You've got your Gauntlet, you've got Smash TV. It's four-player co-op, both local and online, and it's a procedural game, so the levels, the objectives, the loot and stuff is different each time you play. That's kind of the core of the game right there, and we just launched in early access about 2 months ago, and we're working on trying to do monthly content updates, and I think we probably have about 6 to 9 months of content update planned before we're done.
Oh wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we got a long way to go. you know, we're at a great point. We're so happy to see that people are enjoying the game and where it is now, but like knowing where we want to take it versus where it is now, like I can't wait to start getting more and more of the content in and people getting to see that stuff. So,
and if you guys want to check out Monsters and Monocles for yourself, it is available on Steam Early Access right now. You can also check out the website, monstersandmonocles.com. And at least, like, you know, it's a radio show, so I can't show you gameplay, but at least check out, there's like a bunch of YouTubers that have been doing the preview on the Steam Early Access that are showing off the game, so at least check it out, because it's got a pretty cool little art style to it.
Yeah, no, and we're a two-man team working on the game. I do all the programming, and Craig does all the art. And I absolutely, I adore Craig's art. It's one of the reasons we ended up working together. Is like I've always loved the work that he's done, and I jumped at the chance to get to do a game with him. So
yeah, you guys are kind of like a retro look, like a 16-bit kind of, to me, is kind of the look of the game. But you it's like a steampunk theme game, right?
Yeah, Victorian steampunk. Instead of a roguelike, we've been calling it a gentleman-like. And you know, it's very much a silly kind of lighthearted game. Like, there are no serious overtones or themes to it. It's very like fast paced, fun. Like, we have a crumpet cannon, and we have a dog in a smoking jacket named Baron von Dogface that you can play as a character. It's very much just kind of like a lighthearted, like, jokey game. Like, if you could have told 12-year-old me, like, make your ultimate arcade game, it would have ended up a lot like this.
That's awesome. So well, that kind of leads into my question. So how long has this game been in development, and where the heck did this idea come from? How was this game born?
So we started development in January of 2014. So it's a little over 2.5 years now, and Craig and I had been wanting to make a game together for ages, and it just had never really worked out time-wise. Like, I was doing a job, he was working on another project, and it never lined up until then. And so we sat down and said, what's a short game that we can make in like 6 to 9 months? And 2.5 years later, here we are. you know, and for us, the genesis of it was, we loved the arcade growing up, and like going to the arcade with your friends, like with a stack of quarters, playing a game together and just having a blast. And it was that kind of gaming experience we really wanted to recapture with Monsters and Monocles. But times have changed and technology has changed. Like, we don't live near each other. Craig lives down in LA. I live up in Davis. And it was, you know, how can we recreate those experiences with what we have available, even though we, you know, we're at a different stage in our lives. We both have kids now. We don't live near each other. And so, you know, kind of focusing on fast gameplay that you can jump in and out of, you know, that kind of quick, like focused missions and stuff, instead of these long, like kind of more narrative structured games. You know, if I'm playing online, you know, long-term, our goal is to be, he could jump into the game and play with me for as long as he can manage. And then if he has to go, he has to go, and I can keep playing. You know, and we can enjoy the time that we have together when we can play. And, you know, when I want to play solo, I can do that too.
That's pretty cool that you can kind of drop in and out like that. That does remind me a lot as well of like you compared to Gauntlet earlier. Yeah. And Gauntlet was a lot like that. You could just kind of walk up, join in, and then, you know, when you inevitably die, because Gauntlet was designed to go through your quarters. I'm sorry, that game was...
Yeah, it was. Player needs food badly.
Yeah, there was like the built-in mechanism that you would die after a certain amount of time, so...
Yeah, no, and I mean that was arcade design in a nutshell, right? Like, it was designed to take your money at a constant rate.
Seriously. So
we don't do that.
No, that's good. That's
just the one price. You give us $15, the game is yours forever.
Awesome. And that includes these content updates, right? Are you planning DLC, or is all this stuff that you're doing like free add-ons?
We're not talking about any DLC at this point. I mean, we're still in early access. Like, all the stuff that we're doing now, we still consider a base part of the game. Cool. And, you know, we're also working on allowing people to mod the game as they see fit.
Oh.
So, you know, I'd love to get to the point where people can add new guns, new enemies, new maps if they want to be really ambitious. You know, and how much people kind of want to get involved with that, it's going to scale. Like, adding a new character would just be basically drawing the art for the character and editing a data file or two, and then, hey, all of a sudden you've got a new character that you can send to other people or put up on Steam Workshop.
Okay, that's going to be awesome that you open it up to modders. I mean, there's going to be awesome stuff, and then there's going to be, you know, CD humor, weird stuff too, but...
Yeah, I mean, I assume that the first thing that's made is a gun that shoots a penis. Like, I'm just expecting that to happen. It seems to happen whenever you open up mod support. I might just do it as the example to get it out of the way.
You might as well just use the dildo gun. Just get it out of the way.
This is true.
What is that they have in Saints Row? The giant purple dildo bat or whatever?
Yep. Yeah, dildo bat. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it is true. Yeah, we always talk about the TTP of a game, or the time to penis.
Yeah. No, but you know what? I mean, I grew up as a PC gamer, and I loved like kind of getting into the data files. Like, I got my start in making video games by going and messing with the games that I had purchased. I couldn't afford developer tools, and this was before the days of like Linux and free compilers and all that stuff. So I got my start by like finding these files and like mucking with them and seeing how it changed the game. And that's really important for me. Like, if I can get one kid into video games by he mucked with my game and said, hey, maybe I can do this too, like that would be like mission accomplished for me. That would be the best thing ever.
Are there other games on your resume that you've done? I saw that Retro Dreamer had done some like mobile development, but are there...
So this is my first game with Retro Dreamer. I've been making games professionally for 12 years now.
Oh, wow.
And I started in mobile and did mobile for a long time, like even before the iPhone and stuff. And then from there, the iPhone took off and all of my work was basically on the iPhone. So I worked for companies like NG Moco, which is now DNA, Electronic Arts, and some other big companies too, doing contract work and making games for them.
Very cool.
And after a while, I ran away screaming and said, maybe I'll be an indie developer. And now here we are.
You know what's interesting? We hear that story a lot from indie developers here on this show, is that like half the indie developers kind of were starting on like as indie, and then the other half are like, well, I used to do the big studio development, and I ran away screaming and wanted to do my own thing. So,
I mean, it's studio work. It's really rewarding in some way because you're usually working with an amazing group of people,
right.
And they really are amazing because they're all like you. They got into games because they wanted to make them, and they know a ton of stuff, and it's super inspiring. But it's definitely a grind, especially when it's not your idea that you're making. So indie is a great alternative for some folks.
Tell me a little more about how this creating a game across a great distance works, because that's kind of fascinating to me, is that, you know, you guys have been working on this game for a while and you do it across this great distance of, you know, you being in Northern California and your other developer being in Southern California. And that's, you know, that's a good 8-hour drive. You guys can't just meet up for lunch to toss around ideas. But I think that's pretty cool, because for people out there that might be thinking about, I want to make an indie game, but I need a little extra help. That help doesn't necessarily need to be in your own hometown. You're developing kind of across these great distances. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we use tools that, you know, just everybody else uses. We use Slack for day-to-day chatting. We used to use Skype, but Skype wasn't reliable for us, so we stopped using that. And Slack has been great. We just have a chat room up 24/7. If Craig's working on a new enemy or a new monster, he'll just drop images in, and I can see them, and we can comment back and forth. And it's, you know, it's kind of like a persistent conversation. You know, it doesn't matter the time of day. If I have an idea, I can paste it in there. I can tell him that I've pushed a new build up to Dropbox. Well, now Steam, we don't use Dropbox anymore, and he can check it out. And you know, if he's working on new art or a new map or something, he can drop it in there. And that's just kind of our back and forth.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then, you know, besides that, once you're greenlit on Steam, you can push builds of your game whenever you want. So that's been great for us for kind of staying in sync on what's in the game and what's not. And yeah, besides that, you know, Craig does all the art. He gives it to me. I integrate it into the game. And then design is an iterative process. We've had multiplayer in from day one, so we can play the game together and hop on Skype or some other voice chatting thing and talk about what we like, what we don't like, and take notes and kind of go from there.
So one thing I've been very curious about, so Loki and I first got to play your game at the SAC Indie Arcade event in 2015, right? Not this year, but last year. Mm-hmm. So we got to play the game at that event. And at the time we played it, we thought, oh, this is going to be out real soon. This looks like a finished product. But you're still kind of working on it. And the reason why I ask, because I think a lot of games kind of go through this, is that you might play it. I mean, you might even play a big AAA game or something at E3, and it still doesn't come out for, you know, a good year and a half or whatever. So what have you been doing to your game since it felt so playable to now?
I don't know.
No,
we've been doing a lot. So there have been a few big things that kind of slowed us down. First, I had a new baby. So that definitely took some of my time. On the game side of things, we've had networking in from day one, but the game engine that we use, Unity, they added a whole new one. But as part of adding the new networking stack, they completely deprecated the old one, which means we've marked this for removal at some point in the future. We haven't announced when we're going to remove it, but we're going to remove it. And of course, that's what we had used to build all up to that at that point. And so we had to make the call, well, what do we do? Do we move to this new system? Do we move to our own system? And so there was a lot of testing there. And we eventually made the call to write our own networking stack directly on top of Steam's feature list. And that was probably a good 4 months of work right there.
Gotcha.
And then besides that, we've been polishing the game. We really spent a lot of time changing kind of the core mechanics. We weren't happy with the core game feel. And in a game like this, where it's, you know, it's an arcadey thing, like there's nothing to hide the gameplay behind. Like if there's something in the gameplay that's not working, like it's going to stand out like a sore thumb from the very first moment, and it's going to keep annoying you the whole time you play. So we stripped the game kind of back to core principles. I think we cut it down to like two guns and one map and three enemies for about, I'd say about 5 months. And we tweaked, you know, how much damage do guns do? How fast do they fire? How do they affect player movement? How fast does the player move? How fast do enemies move? And just fine tuning each and every little piece and how they interact with each other until we were at a point where we thought, yes, this works. And to be honest, that's something we probably should have done to begin with. But it's tough when you have these shows that you're going to because you want to promote the game and kind of build awareness. You polish to the point where you say, like, this is something we can take to a demo and people are going to have a good time with it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that those underpinnings of your game are solid enough to build the entire game around. And that's kind of where we got stuck.
That's a very interesting thing to think about, I think, for a lot of people, is just how much has to go into balance with the game. Because, you know, if like you say, like a gun is too overpowered, or, yep, you know, something, you know, that core mechanic is broken, people aren't going to bother to play to the fourth or fifth level to see all the cool art that you have later in the game. And the
and weapon balance in particular is a minefield, because our launch is a great example of that. We had a gun, the auto stake launcher, which is basically like a crossbow that shoots vampire killing stakes, but the auto is the upgraded version of it, and it shoots it like super rapidly, and it cooled down. We have this overheat mechanic where for more powerful guns, since we don't have ammo in the game, because we don't want people dealing about ammo and like, can I shoot, can I not shoot? Like, we wanted people to shoot as much as they want. So instead of doing ammo, we have this overheat thing where a powerful gun will eventually overheat and you have to flip to your other gun for a little bit while it cools down. And the auto stake launcher was set to cool down a little too quickly. And so people realized that they could basically just spam it, and it trivialized the game for a lot of people who realized that, and they could just fly through the content. And that was one gun out of 25, I think. And we just missed that one value, and it trivialized the game for a lot of people. So that's getting fixed. Actually, that's been fixed. That was fixed in the last update. But yeah, it's so easy to just make one wrong change that kind of throws everything out of whack.
Wow. Okay. No, that's so important, I think, too, to look at that balance and everything. And I think when you and your co-developer might play this game over and over and over and over again, and even these internal, you know, these companies that have more developers, yep, might play it internally over and over and over again, and they're still not going to come up with that scenario that your users might come up with.
Yeah. So and it's funny because you mentioned like how much time we play. Some of the people in our Discord server for the game give me trouble because I'm now at about 1,400 hours of time played. I played the game a lot, but it's so easy to miss stuff, especially when you play a game as much as we do. Like, you just end up building these assumptions into your mind, and right, you miss stuff that other people see.
Right. I bet that's dangerous, is that you start to assume because you just kind of know the inner workings of the game. You know, I think that it's so important to get new people to play the game and see their reactions. So that's part of the reason why you do different expos and things, right? Like, you did the Sack Indie Arcade event where we saw you. But you were recently at PAX, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And PAX was amazing. PAX is, I love small shows, local shows, because it's a great chance to kind of connect with people more than you can at a big show. But the big shows are so amazing too, because people come from all over. And this show was special, really special to me, because it was the first time we'd had a show since the game had launched. And I was actually meeting people who bought the game and enjoyed the game and came up to tell me about it. And like, that just meant the world to me. As a small developer, like, you know, if I can give players any advice, if you really like a game, like, reach out to the developer and tell them if they're an indie developer, because it means the world to us. Like, we don't hear it very often, but when we do, like, it makes our day. So having that show and having people come up to me, like, I was on cloud nine all 4 days. It was fantastic.
And they so they could send that love digitally via Twitter at Monsters – no, it's Monster Monocles, right?
Is the yeah. Or my personal one is at RJE. Like, we will – I will see either of those pretty much 24/7, so.
There you go. You must have got on the Twitter bandwagon early like me because you have a three-letter name. I have a four-letter name, so.
Yeah, like one of my friends mentioned it to me, and I made an account and then just let it sit there for probably 3 years. And then I was like, oh, maybe I should actually check Twitter out.
Convenient. Yeah. We actually have a live chat room over at live.vognetwork.com, and people, of course, can ask questions. And we have a good question here from Ragenator in our chat room I want to ask you here. Okay. Are there any games that you look to as being inspirational? Or to put it another way, is there a game or games that in your mind are the epitome of how a game within a genre should be made?
Wow, that's a tough question.
Yeah, those are almost two separate questions too. So what about like the insert, like is are there games that have really inspired you with Monsters and Monocles? I guess you kind of talked a little bit about the retro arcade stuff, right? Gauntlet.
Yeah, I mean, specifically within the context of Monsters and Monocles, I would say shooters and kind of co-op games from the arcade. So I mean, the most direct comparison, like I said earlier, were Gauntlet and Smash TV, just in kind of terms of pace and style and thematics and stuff like that. But I mean, you could look at other arcade games like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles co-op was one of my all-time favorite gaming experiences in the arcade. You know, I think it's hard that for the second part of that question to talk about the epitome of a game within a genre, because I feel like that's going to be a very personal thing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I think I'd have a really tough time picking a game. Maybe open world games. Like I adore the Yakuza series from Sega. But that's a very specific niche thing that I apparently love and nobody else in America does. So.
No. Well, he's in Canada, but one of the guys that helps with our website back when we first had done it a long, long time ago, loves Yakuza and always keeps me updated on what's going on with that series. So you're not alone.
Oh, it's the best. Like, it's such an interesting series to me, and I won't. I could talk for hours about it, but I won't.
Look at this. You're winning tons of points in our chat room. Tiger Claw says big points for mentioning Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Dungeon Buster said, "Holy shit, a fellow Yakuza fan. Yeah, it's really the best."
Hey, so, there's three of us. All right,
you guys should start a club.
No? Yeah, the first one on the PlayStation 4 that's coming out is coming out in the States in I think January, and I'm clearing my calendar. I'm gonna play it to death. I can't wait.
I just want to point out, he threatened to do this in a tweet before the show, too, that he was going to derail this with the Yakuza chat, and look what happened.
Hey, it's not nearly as bad as it could be. I haven't gotten to any of my theories about how that game is put together, but it really is a fascinating series that I think more people should check out.
All right, fair enough, and you know, it's one of those things where it's like, there's so many games and just not enough time.
Oh, geez, yeah, I mean, just this week, like, I think I bought four games and I've played one of them. Like, I don't know how I'm going to, like, this is my Steam backlog problem in a nutshell. Like, I have so many games I want to play.
And I don't know if you're as big of a fan as I am, but can you imagine that right now is the time we were supposed to be playing Final Fantasy 15 as well?
Oh my God. Well, yeah. And then the World of Warcraft expansion came out of nowhere, and I had completely forgotten I'd pre-ordered it. And then I lost about 60 hours of my life to that.
Yeah.
And it's fantastic, by the way.
I agree.
Yeah, and God, yeah, and there's just so many, like, it, like, you know, when we talked about launching the game, we tried to find an empty week on the calendar where there wasn't a ton of great stuff coming out, and that week doesn't exist anymore. There's amazing stuff coming out every week of the year, and it's mind-blowing to me. Like, there's never a better time to be a video game fan. Like, there's just an embarrassment of riches.
Yeah, and this week especially, we're going to talk about it a little later in the show, but PlayStation VR this week, I mean, that is going to blow up PlayStation with, I think, there's something like 40 new releases this week.
Yeah, because of PlayStation and I'm so sad I didn't get a pre-order in on time. Oh. I missed it.
Oh, no. We're gonna talk about that a little later in the show, about where we're standing on the VR right now. But let me go back to Monsters and Monocles a little bit. Funny enough, since we brought up PlayStation, I just kind of want to ask you, like, I noticed that it's out there that you guys are working on a PlayStation 4 version. I know I've seen the trailer on the official PlayStation account. Are you guys talking at all, any type of time frame for when that's going to happen? Or
So it's definitely a ways off. It'll be next year sometime. We need to finish the Steam version before we can bring it over to PlayStation. We can't do early access on the PS4 like we are with Steam. So we need to get all the content in and kind of have that blessed 1.0 version and be out of early access on Steam. And then that's the version that will come over to PlayStation. I'm hoping it'll be very close to the time that we do the 1.0 on Steam. The game is up and running on the PlayStation already and has been since, for over a year now. Sony let us show it at PlayStation Experience last year, which was another fantastic show that we got to do.
Oh, cool.
We're really excited about the PlayStation version, especially for the local co-op mode. Like, we've had local in from day one for people who prefer to play that way. But PC gamers, we've noticed local co-op doesn't get a ton of use. It's much more online. But I feel like, you know, with friends and family, local on a console is kind of where the heart and soul of local is. So I'm really excited to have a console release too.
And was that hard to get involved with PlayStation? Because, for an indie developer, the fact that you guys are a two-man team, getting invited to PlayStation Experience, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, PlayStation Experience was amazing and definitely a bit out of the blue. But Sony has been an amazing partner. And the amount of outreach they've done over the last few years to indie developers has really been amazing. Especially if I kind of look back at where things were when I started 10 to 12 years ago, if you wanted to get into console development, like, you needed to have an official company that had its own building with you needed to have like a security setup for dev kits and stuff. And then dev kits, you were talking $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, just to get started.
Right.
And then, you know, if you wanted to ship anything, there was no digital. So you had to find a publisher. Consoles, you know, just like everything else, has gotten easier and easier. And I think we're better off for it. I think we're seeing a wider variety of games than we've ever seen before. And that can very much be attributed to kind of the walls being lowered and them being more accepting of smaller teams.
Well, Ryan, I'm going to wrap things up here. Cause we've taken plenty of your time tonight. I really appreciate you joining us here on the program though, but I really want to wish you continued luck with the continued development of Monsters and Monocles and the monthly content things you guys are planning over on Steam. And again, if you guys are interested at all, if this sounds like this kind of old school arcade game, Smash TV meets procedural generation meets steampunk jokes and stuff, if that sounds up your alley, I really encourage you guys to check it out on Steam Early Access right now. Somebody posted the link in the chat room earlier, so there you go. And those of you listening on the podcast feed can find it with one easy search. I'm sure it would be very hard to forget a name like Monsters and Monocles. Ryan, anything else you want to plug here real quick before we let you go?
No, you know what? That's it. And just thanks so much for having me on. Let me chat about the game a bit. If anybody has any other questions about the game and didn't get them in tonight, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at RJE. If you check out the game, I hope you have a blast.
All right. Is that a pun?
It is now.
All right. Excellent. Ryan, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us here at Orange Lounge Radio. Best of luck with the game. Really look forward to the continued patches and the eventual PS4 release.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Take care, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So Ryan with Retro Dreamer talking about Monsters and Monocles. Thanks to him for taking the time out. That's great. You can tell he's just a gaming fan too, and obviously he has his mm-hmm. things he's passionate about, which might not even necessarily be the same genre he's developing in right now. Like, I don't think I see a lot of Yakuza necessarily in Monsters and Monocles. Although Dungeon Buster says in our chat says a great interview and good luck. Also, please put in a Yakuza-themed Easter egg. So now, you never know. You never know what might happen with that. There you go. All right, well, moving on, getting back into some news. Well, let me talk about my gaming week real quick. So I already talked a little bit about GamerX, but I want to talk about some of the video games I was playing this past week, which, like Ryan, I was also playing that new World of Warcraft expansion. But Final Fantasy XIV got a patch this past week, so I was checking that out as well. It feels like it was this past week because I was gone at GamerX. It was actually 2 weeks ago. So I was checking that out as well. So here's something else I've been playing. So do you remember how we kept telling the listeners, we said if they actually announced the NX, we'll do a show, right?
Right.
Obviously that didn't happen because we didn't do a show. But I would say the number two thing on the list happened last week.
What was the number two thing?
Lost Odyssey became backwards compatible on Xbox One.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, you know I was excited about that. So I've been playing some Lost Odyssey on Xbox One, and I got to say that game has aged pretty well. Like, you know, for as old of a game as it is, it holds up really well. It looks great on Xbox One. And, you know, I remember one place that game got razzed in the early days, especially in the review, was the loading times. Well, think about this now. It's now on your hard drive. And I guess you could install games back during Lost Odyssey, but I want to say there was something like it wasn't recommended for the multi-disc games or something. I seem to remember that being a thing back in the day. Like the but anyway, you can install it to the Xbox One drive, and I feel like some of the loading times for battles and stuff aren't as bad as they were. So interesting, kind of the you know, maybe some of that stuff has even been improved upon a little bit. So I've been able to play very far into the game, but yes, thank you to everybody who tweeted me the day that was announced, which was conveniently the day that I was leaving to go to GamerX. So I didn't get to check it out until I got back, but yes, I definitely got in on Lost Odyssey and was playing that and checking that out. So very, 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 very happy about that. And there's also other backwards compatible stuff that popped in this week. Puzzle Quest 2. Which was cool. Bejeweled 3, like just some random.
Yeah, there was some PopCap stuff that was actually on there for free. I'm not sure if that was a glitch or something, but like Bejeweled 2, 3, want to say, was it Feeding Frenzy 1 and 2 or 2? And then something else.
Oh, no, I didn't catch any of that when it was free. Well, I'd also bought all those games on 360.
Right,
so.
Yeah. I think I owned quite a few of those as well. So, yeah. And I don't have an Xbox One yet, so who knows.
But anyway, it was really cool to be able to revisit Lost Odyssey, and yes, I was very excited when they announced that and getting to go visit that. So yeah, if you haven't played it yet, now's a great time to go visit it. Although, I had heard, I don't know if this was changed, but I had heard you actually still can't buy it digitally, which kind of surprises me.
I don't
me.
Think you can.
That's weird. So you got to go find a used copy somewhere, which you can find them, but I think they got smart and they started jacking up the prices. Like, I was at a local store. I was at Dimple. They were charging $19.99 for it. I was like, dang. This thing must be scarcer than I thought. So
I don't think they're that savvy, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So that was pretty much my gaming week. I think that was, you know, between being at a convention and everything, that was a lot in my week. So yeah. So let's talk about some of the news that we missed last week, since we never got around to that particular kickoff topic. So some of the things that we had missed last week, the Japanese NES Classic was announced. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, the Famicom one?
The Famicom one. So they are getting some different games. So they are not getting some of the things that we're getting, and I don't have the list of what they don't get, but they are getting Yar Kung Fu, Solomon's Key. They are getting the Japanese version of River City Ransom on theirs, cool. Which is pretty cool. So, yeah, NES Open Tournament Golf. So they're getting their own cool little...
It's almost worth the import, that maybe.
I know, right? I wonder if that would work on... I don't see why not. It's HDMI.
HDMI, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Those might be fun to import. You bring up a good thought there. So that was big news. I guess the Lost Odyssey news, of course, that I already touched on, was a pretty big deal. Neo Geo titles are coming to the PlayStation 4 Arcade Archives. I don't know if you guys are following that series on PlayStation 4, but that's where you can get like Bubble Bobble, Gradius 2, Mighty Bomb Jack. Like, they have some like old school 80s classics in here. Well, now they're going to get Neo Geo games. They've announced Fatal Fury, Samurai Showdown, going to be coming to PlayStation 4.
If only they
Archives.
Have that wrapped into some sort of classic arcade type thing, you know.
Let's see. Also, Bit Trip Runner 3. Was announced, so that series is going to be continuing.
Is it so hard? Like, I know this is like something that they've done different games like this, but can we get like a remaster of like the old San Francisco Rush or something like that? Or like, because those games look like dog shit on, you know, everything. Because at the time, that's all it could do. But nowadays, like, I don't necessarily want them like to make new stuff, because the new Rush games aren't that great, but the old ones are great. So let's just. I'm sure they could update everything and just keep the same tracks.
What the hell does that have to do with Bit Trip Runner?
I don't know. We were talking about classic arcade.
All right. Well, I'm excited about Bit Trip Runner 3 because I love the first two. The second was a huge like step up from the first two, and the first was pretty good as it was. So that will be very, very interesting. And for those of you that are playing Stardew Valley, you're going to be able to get divorced in Stardew Valley now. So if you don't like your spouse, you can fix that. That's new in Stardew Valley.
Well, that's a lot better than the previous way, which was throwing her into a combine, but you know.
Do you remember Firewatch, that indie game that had come out on PlayStation 4 not that long ago? And I think they just released on Xbox One recently.
Yes.
Firewatch has sold 1 million copies. They're going to make a movie out of it, apparently. That's kind of random, but I can kind of see it. Like, you know, it was a game that was very driven by story. It's going to be interesting. Is it going to be a scary movie? Like, what are they going to do with it? So
I haven't played the game, so I don't know what the story is.
I'm curious about that. That's going to be interesting. So that is some of what you missed last week. Obviously, we can't fit everything in, but those are some of the things that caught my eye. Before we get into this week's gaming news, I want to mention... we will be here live next week. We will have an OLR live next week. However, I'm going to be running in really late as I'm going to be gone this weekend. It's just is convention time of year, Loki. I'm going to be gone this weekend as well. I'm going to be at Final Fantasy Fan Fest in Las Vegas. So I will be there for the convention Friday, Saturday. So I fly back on Sunday. Thankfully, Vegas is only like an hour and 15-minute flight, so it's a really short flight. But I fly back and I get home at like 1 o'clock. So I'm going to be cutting it, which I know it sounds like a lot of time, but it's really not when you consider that I have to drive back from the airport and, you know, all that stuff. So Loki's going to take care of producing the show next week, so I'm not as worried about that. But it's you know, we're going to be cutting it a little close next week. So I just, you know, kind of letting you guys know that we may get a late start if anything weird happens with the flights. But hopefully that won't happen. We will also not have a live show Veterans Day weekend, which is going to be November 13th. There will not be a live show. However, as a lot of you are highly anticipating, the 666th episode on the show, scheduled to take place the next week on 20 November, we will be doing something that we can actually number as a show. So we'll probably tape earlier in the week. We've done this before. We'll tape on like a Tuesday or Wednesday night, and then that'll be our show for the week so that we don't lose the numbering. And we can still bring you episode 666 on 20 November, which, by the way, I still have no idea what we're doing or how I get. Now it's just a thing. Now it's just a thing that we have to do episode 666 on 20 November. So we'll be figuring that out in the next month. But I am going to Chicago. Just the planets and stars aligned in just the right way. They're doing a big Ingress thing in Chicago. And usually I would not spend all this money to fly out just to play a stupid cell phone game. But it's like I haven't really spent quality time in Chicago. I went to anime... I forget the name. I'm going to get such shit for that. Anime Midwest something happens there. I forgot the name. Because it's been like 10 years since I was there, but I didn't see anything but like the hotel and like a little piece of downtown when I was there. So I get to spend some proper time in Chicago, and I have some friends that live there. So thanks to my buddies that used to do the show Koopa Club, and I know you know some more people just from the internet that live there. So it's kind of one of those things where it all lines up where I get to visit all those folks and then also see get to play some Ingress out of it at the event. So but because of that, we will not be here live that weekend. So just so you guys know. Yes, an Immortal King says 666 still on November 20th. Yes, we will do whatever we have to do to make sure that that happens. Even if we have to put out something really short as episode 665. You know what? After 600 plus episodes, we've earned it if we want to call a 20-minute show a show. All right. That's our housekeeping stuff. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Orange Lounge Radio. We're also on Twitter, twitter.com/OLR. Let's get into what's been going on in the news this week, Loki.
All right. So apparently the Washington State Gambling Commission has issued a warning to Valve to basically telling them, hey, you guys have to stop users from using Steam to, you know, gamble Counter-Strike Go skins or else, you know, basically, I want to say there was a lawsuit against them for that, but somehow it got dropped. But yeah, apparently, you know, there's quite a bit of money in it. It says that, and I don't believe this number. Real quick, I mean, they basically, according to I guess estimates from some esports betting report, they're saying that Counter-Strike Go Lounge has made approximately $1 billion in skin gambling since January 1st and August 1st. That's not... There's no way. I'm sorry. maybe $1 million in magic money that doesn't fucking exist, but I'd $1 billion in real money. No, I'm sorry. There's no fucking way. I mean, I don't know. I don't really know if Valve's necessarily responsible for that, because I mean, they do facilitate you buying stuff, and you can trade it and sell it on their store. It's just mainly a third party site that's kind of exploiting that to do gambling and stuff. So I don't really know how much control they have over it other than, you know, banning those sites. But I mean, as long as they don't make the situation worse by, I don't know, say, introducing something else that could be sold and gambled for. Oh, wait, but they just did. So, yes, they're actually going to be bringing monetized limited use sprays to Counter-Strike Go. That's right, graffiti. So you can earn them in your weekly drops. You can buy them on the Steam Marketplace or purchase a community-made graffiti box, with the proceeds of the sale being shared among community artists.
All right.
I don't know if you can trade the... I assume if you're buying them in the marketplace, you could probably trade them.
Yeah, most of that stuff you can trade. I mean, there's parameters around when you can trade and what kinds of accounts can do it, because that's been exploited an awful lot. But, you know, for the average user like you and me who are playing games, you know, the way they're intended and so forth, yeah, you can probably trade that stuff. I don't know who'd want to use it, but so, people will buy stuff like that. They will.
Well, and so with that, you know, that just means that's one more thing that could be possibly thrown on that market. But I don't know. It's like, I think the whole gambling thing is stupid.
Yeah, that seems like that could be a pretty big deal that could have some big fallout if that, you know, if Valve is found to be facilitating this type of thing, because I guess I just never thought of the gambling.
The reason they're saying they're facilitating is because they have the APIs in place where you can, you know, read Steam, you know, information about Steam accounts and stuff like that through a website. And then also they facilitate, you know, the trading and stuff. They have that back end for it. But I mean, it's these websites using like a creative way to kind of, you know, game the system. Well, I guess
this is like that YouTube guy who was running the company on the side,
right? It's basically, so the way they kind of have it, from what I understand, they have basically like an escrow account that, you know, takes the skin in, and then you would gamble, you know, takes the skin in from everybody that's participating or gun or whatever, and then you're gambling. Basically, you pay money or pay using that skin to gamble in a raffle to win something else that's more valuable, I guess. And so that's how they're supposedly gambling. I mean, it is gambling, but it's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, who's it really hurting? That's what I want to know. Like, kids? Are kids doing this? Because kids don't have any fucking money. I mean,
they have mommy and daddy's wallet.
They have mommy,
and they know
mommy
how to find
and daddy are fucking dumb if they're, you know, basically saying, okay, spend whatever you want. I mean, and like, is it, you know, is it like people that are, you know, have an income that are just dumb and betting on this stuff? I mean, like, who's this really hurting is what I want to know. I mean, I just can't see that there's that much money in that. I mean, if a gambling site is making $1 billion off this, allegedly, and then how much money? Then Valve should be just fucking rolling. No wonder there's no fucking Half-Life 3. They're rolling in fucking money. I just don't. I don't believe those numbers.
Could that billion count when money goes in and out and back in, type of thing?
I don't know.
Like how when people win a $50 jackpot in Vegas, but they put the money right back in. You know, that type of thing. It's kind of like the money counts multiple times because it's going out and in the machines.
I don't believe those numbers.
Looking at our chat over at live.vognetwork.com, Raginator says, some people will gamble on virtually anything, including when or where a farm animal shits, sadly enough.
Yes, but that's usually for charity.
People will bet on Mugen, right? I guess it's all fake currency.
Well, yeah, that's salty bet, and that's just fake. That's just fake. It's not money. It's just
somebody's probably made it money.
No, it's for fun. You just go on there and you try to guess which character is going to win, and then you never get it right, at least in my case.
All right. Well, we'll shift topics.
Back to the salt mines.
We're going to shift topics here and talk about a big change that's happening in gaming this week. I don't know if people will be betting on this or what have you. I bet people are going to be betting on, is it going to be successful or not? But the only one that stands to win or lose money would be Sony, the makers of PlayStation VR. That's right. I say gaming's changing this week because it's going to be the first console VR that is being released, and that is happening this week, is what the Thursday, the 13th, is when this is happening, right? What's pretty impressive about this is that there are a ton of games that are going to be released the same day as the PlayStation VR. A partial list: Batman Arkham VR, Battlezone, Eve Gunjack and Eve Valkyrie, Harmonix Music's VR game, Hatsune Miku Project Diva X, Job Simulator, Super Stardust Ultra VR, PlayStation VR Worlds, Rez Infinite, Rise of the Tomb Raider Blood Ties, Playroom VR, Thumper, Until Dawn Rush of Blood. So that's just a partial list. I mean, there is a ton of games that are being released this week with the PlayStation VR. Now, some of these will require the PlayStation VR, but not all of them do. For example, Rez Infinite doesn't require the PlayStation VR. It's just, you know, it's going to be a totally different experience. Yeah, with the VR. So we've been talking, Loki and I, about the PlayStation VR, and that we have both pre-ordered the device.
Yeah, I pre-ordered, I want to say almost a year ago at this point.
Yeah, I feel like...
It wasn't a year. It was in March.
Yeah, it was in March. It was the day. It was like GDC or something around there is when they kind of did their big announcement. And I think that's when the pre-orders went up on Amazon. And that's when I pre-ordered my PlayStation VR as well. So are you looking forward to Thursday and the arrival of your PlayStation VR?
No, because I've already canceled my pre-order.
Oh, so you canceled your pre-order. Why'd you do that?
I canceled my pre-order because, one, it was expensive, and it would really strap me as far as money's concerned. Two, I didn't think I would get a lot of use out of it, seeing as I have a Gear VR for my phone, and I have an Oculus Rift DK2 that I don't really use. I kind of wanted a nice consumer headset because that would have been, you know, a lot nicer. But also, I was kind of worried with all this, you know, PlayStation Plus stuff, or not PlayStation Plus, PlayStation Pro stuff, that, you know, are these games going to actually play well on this system? I mean, I guess it's supposed to, but what exactly is that going to, you know, mix in with it? And it's just, I don't know. And I just was kind of worried that wasn't going to be... It's going to be just kind of an okay system, but really, is it worth me dropping $400 plus money for games? I mean, that's a lot of money. I could buy an Xbox One and games for that. I mean, seriously, why would I do that? And what would I get more value out of? Probably another game console versus PlayStation VR. And on top of that, then after I canceled it, the embargo came up for people talking about the system, and I got to watch the live streams from Giant Bomb and stuff, and it only confirmed what my worries were, that it's a hot mess.
Really?
Yeah, like the Move controllers work about as good as the Move controllers used to. I mean, they're just not very good at tracking. The graphics themselves are all okay, but, you know, there was serious issues with the camera tracking where your head was. It was just like, it literally was bouncing around like crazy. And it was just, the controls weren't as good as, like, if you're playing on a Vive or something like that. It wasn't as accurate. And just, you know, if I'm going to drop that kind of money on a headset, I'm going to pick up something. I want something that's going to be good. And come on. And knowing with this trend, what they're doing nowadays with stuff, this is going to release now, and in a year or two later, there's going to be a better one. So why am I going to waste my time being an early adopter? Haven't I learned anything from the Kinect, the Move, the blah, blah, blah? I mean, I know I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to do it. I still want to play some of that stuff because it looks fun. But is it worth $500? No.
Well, I'd love to tell you what I think of my PlayStation VR that I had pre-ordered, but I independently came to the same conclusion you did this week, and I canceled my PlayStation VR pre-order a few days ago. I think what it is, I think you kind of hit the nail on that. Well, it was money is a huge component, and it's the fact that, you know, I can use this money to do a last minute trip to Chicago. And so it's kind of one of those things where, do I necessarily need to be an early adopter on this? And I think that's what it kind of came down to for me is, do I need to be the person that has this first at this price level when I'm kind of unsure of what the future holds? And I think something you said hits the nail on the head, which, you know, I'm sure Sony diehards would tell me I'm wrong on. But I do have extreme reservations about them releasing this and the Pro in the same year. It's an extreme amount of mixed signals. With, you know, what is this thing going to do that the Pro can or cannot do? I honestly, as a consumer, as a gamer fan who, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have money that I can spend on games, but I don't have all the money in the world. I can't justify this and the Pro.
Not that I don't want, you know, VR to be successful. I think it's going to be successful, and I hope it is. I'm not sure if, you know, I hope Sony's platform is successful, but... Mm-hmm.
I don't want it to fail at all. I feel almost bad canceling it, but I shouldn't have to.
But always
it's hundreds of dollars.
Right, and I'm always wary, though, of third-party, or not even third-party, like, of accessories released after the fact, because look at, like, the support that even, like, Move and 3D. Remember when they're pushing 3D? Like, all their games are supporting 3D, and, like, the Move controller and stuff, and they even had a stupid looking gun thing that you could get for it, and it was supposed to be the better way to play these games, and that just fucking fell off the table. It's like, oh no, we're not supporting it anymore. And then they bring back the Move controllers to use with this because, oh, it's easy, we don't have to develop anything else. It's just, it's old tech, and it worked okay. I like the Move controllers, but I'm worried that it's not going to be up to snuff for, you know, playing a VR game like this. And it's just, I don't know. I just can't see, and all these games that are coming out are just, seems like they're experiences. They're like shorter games. I mean, I don't really want to play like this tech demo of something, you know, for Final Fantasy and for, you know, Tomb Raider and for Batman and all, in like, was it, you know, Battlefront or something like that. It's not going to be a Battlefront game. It's just going to be kind of something different. No, I don't want to play all these little experiences. $500 is not worth tech demos. If I want to play that kind of tech demo shit, I will get a fucking better computer and a Vive or something, because then I can download tech demos for free, and I can buy shit on Steam, which is probably way cheaper than the shit that they're selling, all the $60 per game. No, I am not paying that kind of money.
Yeah, and I think I started to see the dollars add up with, especially when you start to see how many games are coming out and so forth. It's kind of like, whoa, I'm going to be paying for the PlayStation VR, and then I'm going to pay for this and this. And it's interesting because probably, even a month ago, and I probably even said it on the show, in my mind, I think when they announced the Pro, I was kind of in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to keep the VR and I'm going to cancel the Pro. But now, like, I don't know. I can't really pinpoint where the switch in my mind happened, but I think the opposite is going to hold true. I think I will end up keeping the Pro, and I think I am going to end up getting that system, but I'm not. I kind of want to wait and see where the VR is in a year. I want to see if this really does kind of become like the next must-have thing in gaming, or if it is kind of more like the Kinect.
Even with the Pro, I would just hold off on that, because like, I think that I need to see what enhancements are. I mean, they're talking stuff, but like, I don't know what the enhancements are going
to
be.
I feel like, especially considering what I might be able to get selling my current PlayStation 4 to kind of upgrade it, I feel like it's a smaller investment. It's only probably a couple hundred dollars at the end of the day, as opposed to $500+ for the VR. Does that make sense?
I guess.
Yeah. So that's kind of where I'm at. Dungeon Buster in our chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, nothing wrong with a wait-and-see approach. ActDev says, PlayStation VR will be worth it, but right now you probably don't need it.
I went gung-ho when Kinect came out. I went gung-ho when, like, all these systems came out, and it was fine. I had fun with them, but, like, in the end, it's just like, why did I waste all that money on it? Why did I spend so much money on this stuff? Like, I don't know. Like, I still feel that compulsion to buy it.
Even though
I've seen it's kind of shit, and even the reviews have been just kind of like, I want to say Game Informer gave it like a C-, and like, people are just like, oh my god, you know, this is a mess. And they even like, just watch the Giant Bomb stream. They have like 4 hours where they're playing around with it. Just watch it. And I mean, you're just gonna be like, holy shit, this is what they're fucking releasing in this state? It's just, I don't know. I mean,
Yeah, it's interesting because I hadn't even seen or heard any of that when I finally made the decision. Well, and in the interest of disclosing something else that I kind of ultimately helped me be at peace with my decision, my pal Shane is keeping his pre-order. So when you know that your good buddy who's over at your house at least once, if not twice a week, ended up buying it, you're like, he'll bring it over and I'll get to play it at some point.
It looks so nice. I may end up instead. I saw that they announced one of the first phones that's going to support that Dream thing. The new VR. It's not really a headset. It's like lenses and stuff. So there's the Google Pixel. I may upgrade my phone and do that instead. Because not that I necessarily need a new phone, but I mean the payments aren't that expensive. And, nice new phone would be nice, I guess. And then I can see what VR looks like on that. I think the screen, was it 4K or something? I mean, that'd be pretty sweet, on a phone. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that might be the route to go, or nothing. I mean, my phone's fine. The other thought I was like, I should rebuild my DDR pads. I've been wanting to do that for a long time now. In fact, I'm actually in the point where I'm gathering all my notes because I had it. Before fucking Windows decided, hey, we're going to crash and erase everything. I had actually sketched out a new pad design I was going to make, and then it went away. But I have all my notes on paper, so I'm going to put that digital again.
All right. So, it's a weird place. I wish the PlayStation VR a lot of success, but I just kind of want to take a wait-and-see approach where it's going to be in a year. And I really feel like, unfortunately, throwing the pro into it really muddled a lot of,
yeah,
and it caused all these questions about, is it going to be the best here, or am I going to end up having to buy both, which is a lot to ask in a year. I think the reality is that muddled the message way too much for me.
Like, here's the thing, even like with the pro and stuff like that, it's like, am I going to drop money on another console, and what are my gains really on that, or could I buy a new PC? Because even stuff that we're going to talk about a little bit later, just like dealing with, issues. I mean, PCs have their issues too with like some of these ported games, but like, am I going to just, I can buy a lot of these console games. Like even like No Man's Sky was like, ooh, I got to get PS4 for that. But they had it on Steam. And then in the end, it's just like, okay, I was anticipating that. I mean, it's like, there's not a whole lot that you like, especially like PCs sounding really good. Cause now I can get my No Man's Sky, and I can get my Forza Horizon 3.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I need two consoles? I can just have a PC.
Which, funny enough, you would have thought that I would have been all over Forza Horizon 3 this week, but I just, with the traveling and with having other stuff to play right now, I haven't jumped on that bandwagon right away. I thought I would have been all about that. I probably won't end up buying Forza Horizon 3 until after I'm back from Vegas, honestly. So I have a month break between weekend trips. So, but anyway... yeah, so I will probably end up holding on to the Pro. I'm going to pick that up this year, and then next holiday I'll evaluate VR. I want to see if it's still supported in a year. I want to see kind of what they're talking about.
Let's see what Microsoft does, because they're going to have their system, and who knows, by then VR support.
Yeah, because we don't know if Microsoft's going to go. I mean, we know they have AR, but we don't know if they're going to do VR, so it'll be interesting to see.
Well, they talked about like their system would support VR, so... Yeah. Let's see what they do.
Let's see.
Oh, and maybe we'll see what the NX is by then. Maybe they'll have an announcement by then.
Stop it. We were going to do so good and not even bring up NX tonight. And there you go. There you go. You be quiet. All right.
Well, let me put it this way. Here's my parallel with the NX. And this is because, we didn't know. Yeah, I had more about this, but it's like we didn't really know too much about the PlayStation VR until now. And I just think we're just going to be disappointed because we're making up in our head what it's going to be. And what they have is probably not as exciting as what we're imagining it to be.
This all being said, I will be buying and playing the ever-living shit out of the Res Infinite, just so we're clear. Some of these games that don't require the VR, I will still be buying and playing the crap out of, and starting with Res. So just to be clear, this doesn't change my love of Res whatsoever. All right, let's move on to some more news, Loki.
All right, so Fallout 4 and Skyrim. Guess what? They're still gonna get mods on PlayStation 4, but there's a little bit of a catch with that. So mods are gonna be coming. So first, the mods, I believe, are coming to Skyrim, ironically, first, and then later on they're going to be coming to Fallout 4. The main issue, though, that's going to differ between the what's available on PC and Xbox versus PlayStation 4 is PlayStation 4, you will not be able to use external assets. So you're only going to be able to use the assets that are on the disc or digital copy or whatever. So you're not going to be able to have, like, you know, reskins or, you know, new models, you know, lightsabers, that type of stuff. That's not going to be available to you. But, you know, all the other stuff that tweaks and, you know, the other tweaks that they have available, those could be something that you'll see.
Is this to try to prevent nudie mods?
No, this is, I think, to get around their weird compression and formats that they have to have their external stuff in.
Mm.
It's still disappointing, but I'll take it. Does that mean I'm going to buy Skyrim on PlayStation 4? Probably not. If I get an Xbox One, I'm fucking buying it on that.
I'm just excited at least they're getting some type of mods on PlayStation 4 because we were looking at
exactly
nothing
and something's better than nothing. I'll take something. I don't really need the reskins and stuff like that. I mean, honestly, from what I had on PC, I didn't have a lot of things that changed the model. So I mean, some of the stuff was kind of cool, like the dubstep gun and stuff like that. And of course, you got to put the nudie mods in there too. I mean, because we're all children. So I mean that's fine, and you know I am a little disappointed that we're not gonna have the Macho Man or Randy Savage dragons in Skyrim on console, but you know what, once again, this is where PC fucking excels versus the goddamn consoles.
All right, well, then how about some really, you know, highly anticipated games being released on PC, such as Final Fantasy 15. Final Fantasy 15, some folks have been asking, is this going to come out on the PC? And in fact, the co-director of the game, Hajime Tabata, has said that if they are to develop a PC version of the game, it's going to take at least a year, probably more than a year. And this is in an interview with a Spanish website called Vita Extra, which, you know, is floating around out there and being translated and so forth, saying that on that hypothesis, not talking about something real, just an idea, something like this would take us more than a year. We should work to adapt the engine, which is very laborious, and from there, develop its course. And this is a little bit of a changing course from what was said back in April, where they were saying they were going to take a good hard look at bringing Final Fantasy 15 to PC after it was launched on consoles. But, you know, now that's going to be a huge amount of development time. But imagine the ways people would just mod Final Fantasy 15, you know?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a worry of modding. I'm just surprised it's going to take them so long, being that these platforms are now kind of very similar to PC in the first place. I'm just surprised. I would have thought development time would have been shortened because of that, but I don't know.
Yeah, you would think it would have been a shortened development time, but apparently, yeah, they say it's going to take a year to do that. So
whatever, got time.
You still got to wonder if maybe it will depend on how well Final Fantasy 15 sells on consoles, if they want to invest those resources to develop for PC or not.
I think it's going to sell fine, but
yeah. I think it'll sell fine too. We'll see. But anyway, Loki.
All right. So there's going to be some Pokemon Go updates, actually. I think, I'm not sure when these are going to be happening, if they've happened. No, not yet. So they're going to be doing some tweaks. They're going to be improving the gyms. So now when you're going to train your Pokemon on gyms, you can actually take up to 6 Pokemon. Because before, you know, when you battle a gym, you choose 6. And when you train, you only choose 1, which is kind of odd. Then also what's going to be nice is the medals that you earn right now, which are pretty just kind of pointless. They're actually going to have a point pretty soon. So any medals that you earn for, like, say, catching the same type Pokemon or, you know, walking a certain distance and stuff, it'll give you perks to basically improve stats to catching Pokemon, make it a little bit easier to capture Pokemon, or increasing the odds of capturing the same type or rare ones or whatever the case may be. And they were saying that the medals you get for catching certain amount of Pokemon will affect the capture rates of their type. So, like, you know, if you get poison type or something, it'll make it easier to catch poison type Pokemon or something like that.
Well, that'll be good for folks who feel like it's too hard to capture things right now.
Well, there, yeah, I think some of the stuff that happened, like some of these Pokemon, it's just really silly. Like, you know, I've gotten Pikachus or whatever that'll be like CP31 or something like that, and I throw, I mean, it's bright green on the ring. It's like, okay, this should be an easy capture. I do a spin ball, you know, it's a perfect throw, and it's like, fuck you, I'm escaping, and I ran away. It's like, what the hell is that? It's like, I'm not going to waste a more powerful ball to catch this weak-ass Pokemon.
I got to admit, though, ever since I got the accessory, I've been playing more. I finally hit level 20, and I'm damn near level 21 in Pokemon Go because I evolved a bunch of shit today because I've been getting so much Pidgey candy and Rattata candy from just catching the Shittimon with the little app that I have, or sorry, the little physical device that I have. So I've been playing more of Pokemon Go thanks to that thing, I got to say. And the crappy thing about it, though, is that I run out of Pokeballs, the regular ones, so fast that actually I do only use Great and Ultra Balls to capture Pokemon on the phone now because I need all my regular stuff to use my device. Otherwise, I end up in the shitty position that I was in when I was at GamerX, and I actually have to buy more Pokeballs, which sucks.
Yeah, exactly what they would want you to do.
Hmm. Exactly. Yeah, I know. I won't do that again. I promise I won't do that mistake again. I just have to do a quick note for the live listeners while I'm showing that we are streaming right now. We're going up and down with the live stream, and unfortunately, it's completely out of my control. It's some type of error I've not seen before on Winamp where it's saying it's hanging on the receiving authorization response. So unfortunately, this is on our server host side, which, you know, things have been running pretty smooth for the past few months. I wonder if the inclement weather out there is fucking things up or something, but it's unfortunate. But
you mean the hurricane doesn't push those packets even faster? That's
shush.
Not how it works.
Shush. But yeah, unfortunately, that is happening live. But we're still recording everything for the sake of the podcast, folks. So, you know, we've been talking a few stories here. So we're just going to keep recording for nothing else for the sake of podcast. I apologize to live listeners. But again, like a lot of live things, there are just some situations that are out of my control. And this is one of them. It's not our internet's working fine here in the house. And, you know, there's no weird anomalies on our websites or anything. And I show it just went down again and then reconnected there. So it's that sucks. What can you do? Yeah. I maybe during the classic game of the week, if this is still happening, I'll go do a quick recycle of our internet, see if that helps. But unfortunately, I kind of doubt it. I really think this is on our server side right now. So there you go. All right. For now, though, before we get to the classic game of the week, we still have some more news. And I want to talk about Bloodstained, right? This is the highly anticipated Kickstarter that, you know, it's not Castlevania, but wink, wink. It's going to pretty much be Castlevania.
Well, in more of a sense than Mighty No. 9, it's not Mega Man, but
something. Anyway, so Bloodstained was pushed back to 2018. That was some news that came out, is that they're pushing Bloodstained back to 2018, which is anyone surprised? Nope, didn't think so. But what does this mean for the Wii U and the Vita ports of the game? Because by 2018... is the Wii U really going to be a thing anymore? I mean, if they keep pushing back this NX thing, maybe it will be. But, you know, this brings up a very interesting question, is that at the time they did this Kickstarter, they probably figured that the Wii U and the Vita versions were very important. But now, not so much, right? So, yeah. So there was some questions posed to Koji Igarashi about the Wii U port and so forth. And he said, yes, it's a complicated problem. As timelines move on, certain pieces of hardware become irrelevant. However, this was a game that was backed by people, and we made promises to listen to them. They're the people that gave us life, so to speak. Any sort of change that we do or are considering that goes outside the scope of the promises we've made must be done with lots of explanation, care, and done with lots of back and forth with them to see what options we have. So in other words, he's kind of saying that, you know, we kind of promised it on the Wii U, so we have to deliver it on the Wii U. But if we hear from our backers that, and this, again, my interpretation is, if we hear from our backers that they would be okay with us moving that to Nintendo NX or, you know, whatever that system ends up being, then we'll do it. So it'll be interesting to see what develops with that. I think a lot of people may have backed this because it was going to Wii U. You know, there's been a lot of Nintendo fans that want to see more software on Wii U. So I know there's a lot of people that backed Shovel Knight, that backed, you know, some of these other games to get the Wii U ports to happen. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how that plays out if they choose to cancel the Wii U release. Although I would think if they promise it for NX, then it's going to be okay. Or even better, if NX is straight up backwards compatible with Wii U's digital library, I know, it's a stretch. However, who knows? But if that could be a thing, that maybe, you know, it would work on both.
That would be awesome. I've purchased great resolution. All digital on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm very much expecting, we don't know how fucking networking works, and so we can't tie our stores together.
We'll see. We'll give them a chance.
Because, no offense, and that's not even necessarily a Nintendo thing, because, you know, there's been a lot of... No, I think this is only a Nintendo thing, mm-hmm. now that I think of it. Yeah, fuck them.
All right, moving on. A few more stories here before we get to the classic game of the week. Loki.
Speaking of fucking them, Digital Homicide, the wonderful shovelware developer who was suing Steam users for negative reviews or comments left about their games, they have decided to drop their suit. Probably because they basically said that they are requesting to dismiss the matter since, I guess, it's a function of financial inability, even though they said that they believe their case was strong.
As Alan Alchemy in chat says over at live.vognetwork.com, what a shock. Yes, I'm so surprised. I'm going to die from that surprise.
Yeah, so good for them, I guess.
Well, let's move from talking about that studio to an awesome studio, and that is Jackbox Games, who's been on the show a couple of times. They were here for Jackbox Party Pack 1 and Jackbox Party Pack 2. And guess what's coming out real soon? Jackbox Party Pack 3, and there is a release date that has been announced for that. October 18th is when the Jackbox Party Pack will be out on all of the different platforms that it's scheduled to come out on, except Xbox One, which comes out on the 21st of October. That's probably because the whole staggered kind of Xbox One stuff usually happens on like Thursdays. So anyway, it's just a few days late on Xbox One. That probably won't matter in the big scope of things. Jackbox Party Pack, again, several party games that you'll be able to play with smartphones, things that are designed for streaming as well, which is a thing that they've embraced, and they talked about that on some of their previous interviews. The games that will be included in the Jackbox Party Pack, Quiplash 2, so the sequel to that game. But that's the only sequel. The other games are going to be all new. Trivia Murder Party is the next game that they're doing.
Sounds awesome.
That's a deadly quiz show where you match wits with a trivia-obsessed killer. So that'll be fun.
I love that.
I know, I love that. There's also one called Guesspionage, which they're saying is the data mining guessing game. It looks like it'll be fun based on the previews. TKO, that's TEEKO. It is a t-shirt game where you battle your custom t-shirts to the death. So it sounds like you make custom t-shirts and then they battle each other, like probably a voting type thing that a lot of the Jackbox Party Pack games do. And then lastly is a game called Faking It, where one of your friends is hiding something in this game for tricksters. So I'm assuming it's probably like one of those like two truths and a lie type of games. So that will be in the party pack as well. Only one controller required for navigating menus. Otherwise, everything is played on mobile devices and tablets and so forth. There's an audience mode for streamers, allowing 10,000 people to participate with some of the games.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I know. I love Trivia Murder Party. That's the best name out of all those. So that'll be a lot of fun. So good luck to our buddies over at Jackbox Game with the release of that.
That's too bad that they can't. I mean, I understand with broadcasting stuff live and stuff like that. It's too bad they don't have like TV shows like that where you could play like 10,000 people at once, like actually live.
Oh, you mean like 1 vs. 100, like they used to have on Xbox 360?
Yeah, but I'm talking about like a TV show on TV, not necessarily on.
Oh, like something. Didn't they try to do? Wasn't there that Seacrest hosted thing on NBC? The $1 million. What the hell was it?
I've already lost interest.
All right. But you'll be picking up the Jackbox Party Pack, right, Loki?
I haven't picked up the other ones. Probably not.
What?
I don't play with a lot of people, so yeah.
All right. You'll probably play it at somebody else's house. It's like I'll play the PlayStation VR through Shane because he'll bring it over here. So you'll play.
I'll try the VR when he brings it over.
All right. All right. Anyway, let's travel back to a simpler time when we couldn't play games on our mobile phones. In fact, we probably didn't even have mobile phones at all. Our phones were still stuck on the wall, and you had to have a cord. We're going to take a trip to memory lane with our...
What are you talking about? I played games over my phone all the time.
Oh, is that like calling the weather or the...
No, it's a modem.
Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, tricky, tricky. All right. Modems were the only way to do it. It's the classic game of the week. And thanks to the magic of radio, here she is, everybody. Dark Sakura.
Hi.
How are you?
Full of orange chicken.
Yes, thank you for going to Panda Express. I appreciate that.
That's what I do.
That's right. So I'm going to take a moment to enjoy the fried panda the Dark Sakura got me from Panda
Crunchy.
Express. And you're all going to check out this week's Classic Game of the Week.
Yay.
Dark Sakura, what did you pick for the kids, boys and girls?
I picked a game that I wanted to buy at GamerX. It was $176.
$176?
And I think I already have a copy. Lords of Thunder, specifically the really awesome version that came on the PC Engine Duo. I mean, listen to this music.
I want to rock.
Isn't that great?
It's pretty great.
It's totally a product of its time. In Japan, it was known as Winds of Thunder, and it was a shoot 'em up by Hudson Soft and Red Entertainment.
Lords is so much more metal.
Right. At any rate, it came out for the TurboGrafx Duo in 1993, and it also was ported to the Sega CD in 1995. The Turbo CD version came out on Virtual Console in February 2008, and the game itself is an unofficial follow-up to Gate of Thunder, and as you can tell, it's got a pretty badass rockin' soundtrack. Metal as fuck.
We don't talk about gates on this show. Oh, Gates of Thunder. Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Girl. Anyway, the game is about an evil god and his dark generals that get woken up and fuck shit up in the world. And
yeah,
inherit this armor from your ancestor, Drac, the legendary knight Duran. Goes off to defeat the army.
Ooh. I want a Grandpa Drac.
Oh, it's the ancestor. It might not be his grandfather. But anyway, you select the stage. You actually get the first six stages, and you can select them, kind of like how it happened in Thunder Force 3. And then you pick one of four armors to use that gives you different shots and different bombs. The game itself is great. Especially the Turbo version. The Sega CD version was kind of considered a bit of a weak sauce translation, even though it was fairly close to it. It's basically, the Sega CD really needed shooters, and Lords of Thunder was a really, really good shooter to have on it. It just was dated by the time it came out. I think it came out like 2 years later. But if you've got the Virtual Console version, you'll have the TurboGrafx version, and it is far superior of the two. It's just such a good game, and really, it's just standard just got this. Shooter fare.
Wow, I don't know why all of a sudden, in the middle of the video, do they do that on YouTube now? They just play ads for other stuff right in the middle of a video?
I don't know, because I have Adblock.
That's ridiculous. I thought this computer had it, too.
There's a particular Adblock for Google.
Well, that's embarrassing.
Or for YouTube. Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Bring back the metal. Thank you.
We want our butt rock. Anyway, well, since I've been completely derailed.
My bad.
And there's only the two versions of this. We'll go ahead and put the nail in the coffin for Lords of Thunder. Get it.
Yeah, coffin.
Roar! Lords of Thunder!
Wow!
Okay.
All right, there it is. Your classic game of the week, Lords of Thunder, but only on the Turbo.
Well, the Sega version's okay.
Not the Sega. Not the Sega CD. Fuck Sega CD.
You know what? I like
throw it in the garbage.
I have one.
Burn it.
I have three of them, technically.
You know what would be metal?
I have a CDX.
Destroy one of them.
But they're expensive now. I'm not so metal that I'm not frugal.
All right. Lords of Thunder is your classic game of the week. Thank you, Dark Sakura. Have a rockin' day.
You're welcome, and I will.
So while we were out last week, some other news that they announced was they're going to be bringing over a game to America that has been out in Japan since like 2011. It's been out in Japan for 5 years, and we're finally getting it. It's not a video game, though. It's a trading card game. The Final Fantasy trading card game will be coming out here in the States on October 28th, 2016. So that's pretty exciting. The first set coming out, called Opus 1, it has 216 cards with it. Apparently, there's also going to be some other decks available at launch, including Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy X, and Final Fantasy XIII starter sets. And of course, there will be booster sets, because that's how trading card games work. So all the cards feature designs by Yoshitaka Amano, Tetsuya Nomura, Akihiko Yoshida. There will be standard and premium foil versions of it. So if you want to see how this game works, there's already some YouTubes that are going out there. Square Enix is putting some stuff up on the YouTube about how to play the game. And I got to admit, as a Final Fantasy fanboy, this sounds like something I might want to learn how to play. It looks pretty cool. What other do you know of any other games you can think of that would translate well to a trading card game, Loki? Do you think there's any other series you'd like to see become a trading card game?
No, I can't really think of anything.
Surprisingly, there's not really like.
I actually know it would be kind of fun or kind of cute, but I don't know how they would play. But Enter the Gungeon, I'd like just because the art style is pretty awesome. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I don't really know.
I like this in chat over at live.vognetwork.com. ActDef says, I use Stab on Aerith. Maybe that'll be a move you can actually do in the trading card game. I don't know. I like retro stuff, so it would always be cool to see. I want to see the Guardian Legend become a trading card game. All right, that may not work so well.
How does that work?
I don't know. How does the game work? Two phases, shoot and explore. Doesn't necessarily have to be a complex card game. It doesn't have to
be
like
Magic. No Man's Sky, the collectible card game.
Oh, there you go.
You're on a planet, and there's stuff there. You leave the planet.
And some of the cards are just blank.
This planet looks exactly like the other planet.
Or there was a card here that we've removed from the deck. Every week that you play, you have to remove two cards from your deck permanently because some features got eliminated. I like that.
You've now achieved the worst score possible on Steam.
All right. I'm just kidding. Dungeon Buster is quoting me there saying, wow, I'm just throwing a little unnecessary shade. Come on. Actually, the concept of No Man's Sky and exploring play, actually, that would, I mean, all seriousness, actually kind of make a cool trading card game, I think. You know, I'm sure there's got to be other space exploration card games that are out there, and plenty. I'm just not as well versed in the tabletop side of things, but I'm sure I've seen something like that before. So, you know, but something that, you know, kind of branded with that No Man's Sky.
Or how about we
fun.
Do Day of the Tentacle, and you can, you know, have the three different timelines, and then you do stuff that, you know, affects the other timelines.
Yeah. Well, anyway, regardless, I'm looking forward to the Final Fantasy trading card game. I don't usually get super into trading card games. I used to play Magic back in the day, but not so much anymore. But Final Fantasy, you know, I got a weak spot for that series, so I'll have to check that out. Anyhow, let's do some rapid fire news and quickly touch on a few other things that have happened through the week. Loki.
Okay, so if I remember correctly, I think wasn't TwitchCon going on at the same time as GamerX or something like that?
TwitchCon was the exact same weekend as GamerX in a different city. It was in SoCal, right, in San Diego this year.
Right, so one of the things that was announced shortly around there was that Twitch Prime is going to be a new thing. It's a premium experience that is included with Amazon Prime. And so with that, you get a free game or free game loot every month. So, cool, I guess. I mean, since you are paying for Amazon Prime, it's nice to get more and more things with it. Along with, it says, looks like with Twitch Prime, you can also, let's see here, get ad-free viewing. So that's kind of nice. And exclusive emotes and chat badge. And one free channel subscription every 30 days.
That alone is going to be huge for the economy on Twitch. Because, you know, there's a lot of streamers that, you know, they make a secondary income off, or even maybe primary income for some people, off those subscriptions. So the fact that, you know, many people like myself already have Amazon Prime. So for me, this is really a something for nothing for me, even though, yes, I know it's not nothing because I'm paying yearly for Amazon, or Amazon Prime, and this is going to be an excuse for them to jack up the price again. However, I enjoy Amazon Prime enough that, you know, I would have renewed it with or without this. So the fact that this is going to be a part of it too is cool. And so this will allow me to throw free money every month at a streamer. And maybe someday if I, you know, stop doing so many podcasts in a week and do more streaming, it's something that could be benefit me too, is that some folks could, you know, subscribe to my stream and kick money back that way. So that's huge. Yeah. So that's, I was really happy to hear this news. I think a lot of us were waiting to hear, you know, what's going to come of this Amazon marriage. Is there going to be a Twitch Prime? People were asking that the very first day this was announced. So that's pretty cool.
So Oculus, during their Oculus Connect keynote, they had revealed that the Oculus Touch controllers are going to be coming out this year. Looks like December 6th, and they're going to cost $199. Along with that, they're going to include two games, including VR Sports Challenge and The Unspoken. You know, and I remember that, like, Oculus, one of the things that they were touting is that they were cheaper than the Vive, but not anymore. Not with this. I mean, you kind of need this for the experience, and that's expensive. I mean, I guess that is an advantage that PlayStation VR has. Too bad their controllers are shit. So they need to come up. No, seriously, all they need to do is fix the camera issues where it can't track you very well. That can be done with a firmware update, and come up with a new controller, new motion controller, and then I'll be on board.
All right. Well, moving on to free games. Maybe you don't want to pay that type of money for your gaming rig, but if you want something free, you can get Beyond Good and Evil free on the PC, but you do have to have a Uplay account. But I think most people have that anyway because they probably got convinced to sign up for one through one of the other Ubisoft games. But you will be able to get Beyond Good and Evil free on PC. That is free from October 12th, so that's going to be this week.
Yeah, so their one game free a month thing that they've been doing.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So some other games that were released: Prince of Persia, Sands of Time, Splinter Cell, Rayman Origins, The Crew, Beyond Good and Evil is this upcoming month. So, and some people, this is like one of their favorite games ever made. And, you know, there's always those rumors about a sequel. So I think some folks will be excited to check that out. And, you know, maybe some folks that missed that the first time around. Also, Street Fighter V is chugging along. Now the people have calmed down a little bit. Now they have story mode in the game. But some other extras are going to be coming to Street Fighter V, including Halloween costumes and stage updates to go for the month of October. The costumes will be available for $4. That will be 10 different colors there. And the special Halloween stage can be purchased for $2 or 40,000 fight money, which I'm assuming is the in-game currency. I haven't played a lot of Street Fighter V, admittedly. So you could, they were able to do that at New York Comic Con, which I think happened this past weekend. They were able to try that out. And then the exclusive content is going to be available from October 11th this week through November 29th. And then that's it. It is limited time stuff. So if you are wanting to get your Halloween on, check that out. That is a Ghostly Ryu, a Franken Nash, and a Wolfman Nikali are the different costumes that you can check out. Supposedly, though, Street Fighter V, not the only game that's getting Halloween costumes. Overwatch also going to be getting some spooky loot boxes. I'm assuming this is going to be very similar to their, they didn't call it the Olympic event, but it was the Olympic event, the Summer Games event or whatever they're doing. This was leaked from the Xbox store. There's a screen that got snapped that's floating around the internet that shows that you can purchase Halloween loot boxes. So, yeah, probably something that is going to come out with some new Halloween skins for the characters and, you know, some probably some poses and things like that as well. Also, something that has been noted is that the box art contains the skull logo, a purple skull logo that is often associated with Sombra, who's supposed to be the next rumored hero in the game, was actually rumored to be the first hero announced for the game, even though they did Anna instead. So, and Blizzard has also been said somewhere else that the next character for Overwatch is coming sooner rather than later. So it could all be lining up, or it could just be a typical Blizzard misnomer. But who knows? That could be coming very soon. It should be noted, though, that BlizzCon is not too far away. I think it's the first weekend in November. So I don't think they would hold off the Halloween stuff till early November. That doesn't make sense. But wouldn't it be great if they would come out at BlizzCon and say, there's a new character in Overwatch today? That might be a big thing. So who knows? We'll see. Halloween events in different games. Enjoy them. Meanwhile, let's take a look at the new things that will be arriving in stores this week. Loki, what about in the U.S.? What's in stores this week?
There's a lot of things coming out this week. So let's start off with 100-foot robot golf. That's coming out on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation VR.
Oh, God, it's all the PlayStation VR games. Oh, here we go. Get a book.
Criminal Girls 2 Party Favors on Vita. Dragon Quest Builders on PlayStation 4 and Vita. That was that kind of Minecraft-type game. Duke Nukem 3D 20th Anniversary Edition World Tour on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Manuel Samuel on PC and PlayStation 4. Gears of War 4 on Windows 10 and Xbox One. Looks like Roos on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Rise of the Tomb Raider 20-year celebration on PlayStation 4. I guess that's the PS4 version of it, because didn't we not get that? Wasn't that because Rise of Tomb Raider never came out on PlayStation 4?
Yeah, so it's going to be though now with this week.
And then Valkyrie Drive Bikuni, that's on PlayStation Vita. WWE 2K17 on PS3, Xbox 360, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Goner on PC, Mac, and Linux. Manus Burn Racing on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And then your VR games, Ace Banana, Batman Arkham VR, Battlezone VR, Drive Club VR, Eve Gunjack, Eve Valkyrie, Harmonix Music VR, Here They Lie, Hustle Kings VR, Job Simulator, Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, Loading Human, PlayStation VR Worlds, Riggs Mechanicized Combat League, and then, of course, Sports Bar VR, Super Hypercube, Super Stardust Ultra VR, The Assembly, Until Dawn, Rush of Blood, Wayward Sky, and World War Tunes. Those are all PlayStation VR. On PlayStation VR and PlayStation 4, we have Res Infinite, Roller Coaster Dreams, and it looks like Thumper. That's also on PC as well. And then Shadow Warrior 2 on PC. Dundunpanchi Resurrection on PC, Disney Magical World 2 on 3DS, Farabelle on PC, Mac, and Linux. Also, Manuel Samuel is going to be coming out on Xbox One. And then yet another toys game that's going to be coming out 1 week from today, and that's Skylanders Imaginators. That's on PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, Wii U, Xbox 360, and Xbox One.
Busy.
Yeah, it is very, very busy.
Did you get through it all? Is that it?
That is it.
All right, let's go over to Japan. And Japan is also getting the PlayStation VR this week. So it's causing a few things to come out with that. Although my list is not as extensive as the one Loki has, but I know there's a lot of digital releases, and my list doesn't capture all the digital stuff. But what we do have coming out in Japan this week, of course, the PlayStation VR. Also, there are some games as well on PlayStation 4. Riggs Machine Combat League is out. We also have PlayStation VR Worlds. Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens randomly in there, even though, of course, that's not necessarily a VR game. Rise of the Tomb Raider is also out in Japan this week, and that's kind of the highlights from the list that I have here, but those are all things that you can expect in a physical form. Again, this list is not going to capture anything that is digital. In Japan, Paper Mario Color Splash is out this week, as well as Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens. So we got the Color Splash here in the U.S. looks like a little early. Compared to Japan. So that is out this week in Japan. On the PlayStation Vita, the Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens is out there as well. A game called Plastic Memories in regular and limited edition. And Kengo Kuto Mary Skelter in regular and limited edition. And lastly, on the 3DS this week, Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens. Otherwise, a slow week on the 3DS. A very, very busy week. Next week, however, with some new amiibo coming out and a Mario Party game. So Mario Party Star Rush specifically. So that is the Japanese in stores. How about UK?
So there's Duke Nukem 3D 20th Anniversary World Tour on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Gears of War 4 on Xbox One and Windows 10. And then Here They Lie on PlayStation 4. Even though this is a mobile game, I just thought that the name that they have listed on here is hilarious. Really Bad Chess. That's on iPad and iPhone. Res Infinite on PlayStation 4. Let's Sing 2017 on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and the Wii. That's kind of surprising. And finally, Emergency 2016.
All right. Busy week in releases all across the globe, but especially with the PlayStation VR, certainly. Let's get to the mailbag. Every week, you guys send us emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send us an email if you are so inclined. And we read emails on this show. Usually after a break, we come back to an empty mailbox because people go, they don't email us because they know there's no show that week, and then they don't email us because there was no show during the week. But we did get one email this week, so we will read that email now. And it's from our pal, Ragenator, who says, "Hi, guys, it's Ragenator yet again with a last-second email." What time did you send this? Oh, my God, he sent this during the show at 6:30. Well, lucky you. All right, anyway. I can't think of a timely subject for this email, so instead I will pose this question. Suppose that for whatever reason you're filthy, filthy, filthy rich to the point where even Bill Gates would say, damn. Now, with that being said, if you could create your idea geeked-themed man cave, why has it got to be a man cave? Now I get what you're saying. Where space and money are no object, what would you do? For me, I'd do the following. The man cave would be in the basement, and to get down to the man cave, you would go down a slide and land in a ball pit. One area would have a custom-made, one-of-a-kind, 1,000-inch 32K 3D TV. Dude, those don't exist. With a 7.1 sound
system.
That's
why it's custom.
And every console hooked up to it. Plus a top-of-the-line PC that would even make NASA's computers jealous. I'd also have one of those speaker systems that look like retro jukeboxes with built-in lights set up to play all my music. In another area, I'd have two of every arcade game and pinball table ever made set up. How big is your basement, dude? Plus stuff like skee ball and other arcade favorites. In a third area, I'd have an actual in-home pizzeria. Throughout the basement, I'd have tons of gaming posters, 80s and 90s pop culture posters, for example, Beavis and Butthead, Nick cartoon posters, etc., on the walls. Plus, I'd have enough decorative lighting around to make Spencer's gifts jealous. That email there from our pal Ragenator. So what would you do with a limitless budget? What would be in your man cave? Or woman cave, Loki?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, what's the point of having a man cave at that point? Just buy, like, make your own family fun center or something like that, or just a theme park. I mean, like, I guess.
I'm going to answer this for Loki. Loki's dream man cave would have a passcode that his wife and kids don't know.
No, that's not true at all.
I'm kidding.
My wife out. She just wouldn't want to come down there. That's fine. And, you know, she can have whatever she wants. That's fine. My kids is just, yeah, it wouldn't matter. I don't know. I always drive by, like, on my way to work and stuff. I see these, like, somewhat, not high-rise buildings, but, like, you know, just several stories tall buildings. I'm like, wouldn't it be fun just to fill that full of, like, game stuff? So something like that. I'd just buy a building and fill it full of game stuff. Or open up, or hey, if I want to make some of that money back, even though I have limitless amount of money, it would be nice to open up a really kick-ass, like, arcade fun center thing with, like, ridiculous shit that you only see in, like, Japan. You know, like, those indoor ski slopes and fucking, you know, beach and all sorts of crazy stuff. But mainly arcade games and the...
Yeah, I feel like if I had that type of budget, I would want...
I'd make the most kick-ass laser tag game on the face of the goddamn earth.
There you go. You're going to bring back Qzar.
You're
going to combine every old Qzar that went into out of business into one Super Qzar that you're going to run.
It would be a Super Qzar.
I love that.
Augmented reality Super Qzar.
There you go. Now that's a Loki idea. I like that.
That's a Loki idea.
Let's see. For me, yeah, I'm kind of in that whole part of... I don't know if I would want that all in my house, because that would be, I mean, admittedly, to have all that stuff in your house would kind of be a little lonely. You know, I mean, not to sound like all depressing, but it's like, you know, okay, so I could enjoy all this, but it would be really boring to not be able to enjoy it with other people. I mean, obviously, Alan lives here. He'd be able to enjoy it, too. And obviously, I would have friends over now and then, but maybe this is like the super cheesy side of me or something, but I would want, like, if I had that type of space and set up and so forth to set up this arcade that's, like, fun all the time, I would want kids who can't have fun all the time to be able to experience that as well. So I would want a space where responsible, well-behaved, and parented children. When I say parented, I mean, you know, disciplined, you know, that type of thing. Kids that have good fucking manners could come and play machines and aren't going to wreck them and be
ridiculous.
And who
cares? Even if they wreck them, you can have a fleet of people to repair shit. It wouldn't fucking matter.
I want a place where kids are not going to bully other kids. That's why I don't want those kids there. I'm not so worried about the machine. Somebody's going to spill a soda on a machine and it's going to suck, but I don't want those kids that are going to bully the other kids. I want it to be a place where people can have fun and that type of thing. Is that cheesy? I swear to God, it's my honest thing. It's like I would be so bored if I had all that in my house alone. It's like, you know, you hear about the crazy rich people that live in a castle up in the hill, like Enya, right? Enya lives in a fucking castle in the middle of God knows where, and then the United Kingdom somewhere, if even that. She lives in a castle with what, cats? And her giant quill pen that I'm sure she uses to write her songs. Like, you know, wouldn't it be a little boring eventually? I don't know.
So is that a catsle?
maybe I just open a cat cafe.
Cat cafe.
That would be enough for me. All right. So anyway, there you go. Sorry if that's cheesy, but those are the answers to the questions that we got. So if you want to send us cheesy questions, you sure can. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place where you can send your emails. So we got a few more stories for you guys before we open up the Skype line at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype. But first, Loki.
All right. So, you may remember a few years ago, there was, Lizard Squad was like a little hacking click or whatever that would just DDoS shit.
And they would not be allowed in my arcade.
So, they were responsible for, I guess, or they claimed responsibility for DDoS attacks against Xbox Live and PlayStation Network in 2014. Well, apparently they have been convicted for over 50,000 counts of cybercrime, including harassment, fraud, and data breaches. So, apparently there were two 19-year-olds. And, yeah, they were charged, and I guess the charges carry a 10-year maximum sentence in prison.
Well, bye. Somebody's got to get punished for this. These are crimes that you're committing, and you don't get to just get away with them scot-free. So have fun in the slamma.
Yeah, so apparently they were both under Lizard Squad and Poodle Corp. And I guess they even had hacked Taylor Swift's Twitter account. And what else? They had conspired with other members of Lizard Squad to run cyber attacks for hire websites, trafficking stolen payment card accounts.
Well, it's probably they're being made an example of a little bit, but that's what has to happen to deter other people from doing it, because it shows that, yes, they will do something about it. So I hope they can catch a few more of these folks that do this shit and show that you can't get away with it. Anyhow, shifting gears here a little bit, let's talk about something that Phil Spencer, of course, the head of Xbox, was talking about bad reviews this week. And he kind of dropped a truth bomb on some people. And this was in an interview that he was doing this week where he was discussing about like the ReCore, you know, because ReCore was a game that came out recently. Mm-hmm. And now ReCore has an average score of 63% on Metacritic. And here's a quote from his interview. I think there are certain reviews that are written more to get clicked on than they are to actually accurately reflect the quality of the game, and that kind of bums me out. On the reviews, honestly, I thought some of the reviews were a little harsh in their terms of the view of the game. I didn't try to tell anybody that it was a 10, speaking about ReCore. I think we knew, as with any games, that there are certain things. If we started from the beginning and we knew what we get, there's a couple things we would have done slightly differently. But then he goes on to talk about Forza Horizon 3, where, he was talking about Forza Horizon 3 and the scores that's getting, saying, we're very proud of how the game ended up, and I think 7, 8, 9, like anywhere in there is fine. 3 or 4, I mean, somebody gave Forza Horizon 3 a 4. And that's when he said, I think there are certain reviews that are written more to get clicked on than they are to actually accurately reflect the quality of the game, and that kind of bums me out. And I thought that was a pretty darn good truth bomb he kind of dropped on people, is that, you know, there's people that write some clickbaity shit out there, and we've certainly accused certain journalistic websites out there this in the past. And I'm sure that this is still going on, right, Logie?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of these sites that are a little harsh or whatever. Especially if you read the reviews and the reasons that they give for it, sometimes they're like political, you know. It's silly stuff.
But to be a fair counterpoint, I mean, you know, if a group of 100 people play a game, there's going to be somebody that doesn't like it for whatever weird reason, yeah. Right? I mean, like even Rotten Tomato movie reviews and stuff, you know? I mean, there's going to be people that love it, but there's always going to be that one in a crowd who doesn't like it. Like, I'm sure this has happened to all of you. Haven't you seen a movie that you hated that everybody else like lost their shit over and you're like, why is this movie
isn't
that
good? That's why you just find reviewers like that you kind of align with as far as what their tastes are versus what your tastes are, and then kind of go off of that or go off of, you know, just even like some of these playthroughs and stuff when they do previews and stuff and just judge it based off of what you're seeing on there. And
are you saying you have to review reviewers?
Not necessarily. Just don't, like, if, I mean, obviously, if you're reading the reviews, don't just go by the score. Find out what made them come to that conclusion. And if their reasoning is kind of ridiculous, then you can, you know, make that judgment based on that. Because some people don't like certain types of games. And for whatever reason, those people, they have them review those games. And I don't know. Yeah. I can only assume that. Because that would have been such a dumb decision in the first place, you know, to have somebody that hates a genre review that genre, that they're really doing it just to clickbait, or they're just that dumb editorially.
Going to Tiger Claw in our chat room saying, you can't take Rotten Tomatoes seriously, though. Even if movies get bad reviews and you end up loving it, it's just a critic's opinion, but your own opinion matters more. You know, and I think he's bringing up a point, and this happens a lot with movies, is that there's movies that critics hate, and it's usually comedies, right? The critics usually hate them, but like, you know, the Joe average movie viewer might like it a lot more, and especially like genre movies too, right?
Right, and well, and I think also a lot of these reviews, especially when it comes to games, it's not necessarily, you kind of have a preconceived notion of whether you're going to like a game or not. It's more of like, is it functional? You know, if the game is glitchy as shit, or if it runs poorly, or it's just, you know, controls terribly. I mean, that's going to play into it a lot versus, you know, oh, this game, I didn't like the graphics in it or something like that. You know, well, you'll know based off of watching, you know, the trailers and the, I mean, I don't know. You're going to have an idea of whether you like it or not. And, you know, it also maybe wait and see how it is. Or if you don't want to purchase something, rent it and try it that way. Oh, my God. The way we've always fucking done it back in the days when there's actually rental places. I mean, there's Redbox now in the U.S. But I'm sure there's some place you can rent something, maybe even Gamefly, to try a game out before you want to buy it.
Act Deft in chat says you don't judge something solely based on reviews. Yeah, and that's I think that's really important. The gamers have to take some onus for that. This too is that you can't do 100% of your judgment on reviews. But this is where live streaming, I think, has really stepped in a lot. Is that I think there is a lot of people to kind of watch other people play games and make a decision based off that. It's just an extension of what we probably did as kids, where you would want to buy a video game because you went over to your friend's house and you played it over there, and you wanted it at your house. A Kaijudo in chat over at live.vognetwork.com says, movies, music, games, books are all subjective. I never listen to critics or gamers. I know what I like and what I don't. No. Good feedback on this topic there. But yeah, I just thought that was very interesting that, you know, the head of Xbox went so far as to kind of call out clickbait in that regard. Thought that was very interesting. Anyway, a few more stories for you, Loki.
All right, so this is kind of interesting. I'm not sure what's going to come of this, but I do like the developers. So PewDiePie and also the developer or one of the designers of Goat Simulator, Armin, I'm going to try to pronounce his last name here, Ibris, I butchered that. Anyways, Armin, we'll just go by his first name, one of the designers there, and I follow him on Twitter. So they're actually collaborating to develop some games. So the first game that they're going to release is a mobile game called the PewDiePie Tuber Simulator, where you actually play as a YouTuber. And I know they have similar games like this on Steam already, so I'm kind of curious to see what it is. But basically, you know, they're saying that, you know, the as far as their partnership. There's comedy is huge entertainment, but it still feels in its infancy in the game industry. Felix and I would like to work on changing that. So they're looking to make funny games, and Goat Simulator is pretty funny. I'll be curious to see what happens.
Yeah, it's a weird partnership, but I'm with you. It's like, well, the developers of Goat Simulator are really, you know, that was a hilarious game, so, you know.
Yeah, it was silly. I mean, I don't know. I can't be that bad.
How bad can it be? Famous last words. All right, anyway, last tonight, before we open up the Skype lines at Orange Lounge Radio on Skype, some more Twitch news. This actually, I think this came out after TwitchCon. I don't think this was something they actually unveiled at TwitchCon, but this is, you know, we've seen this develop before. You remember that whole bit system that they had where you could actually tip live streamers in bits, which would turn into real-world money, basically? I think it was like, I don't know, it was 10 cents or 1 cent per bit or something like that. Well, it was announced this week that you will be able to, if you don't want to actually spend money on Twitch, even though now with Twitch Prime, Twitch can be ad free for you. If you want, you can watch ads on Twitch to earn bits. Kind of similar to like mobile games, right?
So, yeah, mobile games do that a
yeah,
lot.
You something you watch an ad and you earn some of the in-game currency.
And I'm fine
right?
with that.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because it's not mandatory, I suppose, right? So if you sit through a 30-second interactive ad, you can earn some bits, and they're slowly rolling this out. You can still choose to purchase 100 bits for $1.40. So I think it must be 1 cent for each bit that you do there. But now you can earn the bits by watching a sponsored video or perhaps doing a survey. They say that this will typically reward users with 5 bits, but some offers will be worth up to 100. I imagine the more interactive ones that are surveys and stuff will probably reward you more. Or sign up for such and such website and all this. It'd be very interesting to see.
I hate any of those. I have to.
It's not mandatory, so it's
I understand it's not mandatory, but... Like, for example,
Tap My Katamari. That's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, okay. It's Tap My... That was the... Okay, yeah, Tap My Katamari, they
Cookie
tried...
Cookie Clicker Katamari.
Cookie Clicker yes, thank you. So, that game, they added that right before I stopped playing it. All these offers you could do to earn in-game currency and stuff, and none of them fucking work. Like, you go to a website and answer some survey questions and shit like that, and it's like, yeah, there'll be a short delay before when that says credit to your account. 2 weeks later, still fucking nothing. So that kind of shit I don't like. Watching the videos, fine, because that shit at least works. I mean, that's kind of cool, but every time I hear about this tip system, it reminds me of like those fucking adult chat rooms where you like tipping the people that have sex on camera and shit like that. It's just like, that's where they should have the ads. Get free money for that shit. But like, for tipping people like pennies, you know, it's kind of silly.
And it makes me wonder, though, if we stream this show on Twitch, not that we would ever leave VOG or whatever, but if we were to like stream this show on Twitch, could we actually get people throw in their bits at us and use that money to buy new mics?
Show us your bits.
Show me them bitties. Show me your naughty bits. Oh, man, there's so many puns. So many puns with this. This is, I guess, is opening up in the U.S., so it's something that you can participate in here in the U.S., where our show is based. But you can use the bits in any chat channel that has the cheering enabled, which I don't think cheering is enabled for everybody yet, but they are looking at expanding that to more users in the future. So, very interesting how this is developing, and probably more and more people are going to get in on streaming this video game stuff. So, very curious to see how that unfolds. Anyhow, it is time to open up the Skype line at Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. Again, that's Orange Lounge Radio. Kaijudo in chat says, fuck those bits, but if peeps want to use them, that's cool. Yeah, I guess the cool thing is, at the end of the day, this really doesn't affect the you know, content itself or whatever. None of it's mandatory, although... You got to worry that there might be some streamers out there that are going to be like, they're going to hold their streams hostage where it's like, I'm not going to do anything unless I get 1,000 bits. Right.
So exactly like those adult chat rooms.
Yeah. But I'm not going to, show my boobies until I get so much, money or whatever. But then I would think, I think there would be a trade off for that, because if you do that, it's very easy to just go find something else on Twitch. You know what I mean?
But sometimes they have a nice rack, and so you stay there.
Anyway, again, it's Orange Lounge Radio, all one word on Skype. If you want to give us a call, and we can talk about anything we've discussed in our show this
No,
week,
but it's silly to hold your channel hostage for what is literally pennies.
Literally pennies. Yeah. Anyhow.
And does the streamer get that full penny, or they get like a fraction of the penny?
Well, because it costs $1.40 to get 100 bits, that's where Twitch is getting their money. Because you're buying $1 in currency that's for $1.40. Yeah, that's where it's coming from. Anyway, our phone is going off, so I do want to get to some of the calls. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, this is Marcus.
Hey, Marcus, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Saw you at GamerX, actually.
I remember running into you there. Thank you for coming to the panel. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was great.
Hope you had, and thank you for the ribbon.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
I think how many ribbons did you get?
A ton. They're all in the back seat of my car still because I had it on the gear shift and it was getting in the way. But there's a ton. I walked out of there with a ton of ribbons. I ended up getting a special guest ribbon, and I can't tell you how, but I got a special guest ribbon. It was like my coup de grace at the very end. Was I was actually a special guest of GamerX for the last 2 minutes of the show. So that was exciting. Yeah, if you didn't see that, if you're not following me on Twitter, there was like people had these ribbons was like the big thing this year. And it wasn't just the con itself, but like, you know, certain booths had ribbons, certain cosplayers had ribbons. And I was like, nobody told me this was going to be a fucking ribbon party. I would have had some VOG ribbons made. Why didn't I know this? So that is the lesson learned between Dragon Con and GamerX. I am fucking getting some podcasting ribbons made. That's the lesson I'm learning from these because I like ribbons. But anyway, my goal was to collect them all. And even some of the organizers for GamerX saw my lanyard and were like, you have a lot of ribbons. And I was like, got to catch them all. And it'd make them laugh. So anyway, sorry, Marcus. What did you call in to talk about tonight?
Well, I actually wanted to call to talk about PlayStation VR.
Yeah.
So I also am one of those people, you know, pre-ordered it the minute it went up. Been wondering about that pre-order ever since. It's really tough right now. I mean, the text reviews I've read, from what I saw, they looked really positive. At least the scores were pretty high. But I know Loki mentioned that Giant Bomb streamed for like a bunch of hours, PlayStation VR, and it was like a mess. And I watched that stream too. And that almost, you know, tipped it over for me. What was happening was beyond anything. I have a Oculus Rift. I also have a Gear VR. Those are fine. But what I saw in that stream was just like extreme nausea. Just like it would be so bad. But so many reviews never mentioned anything like this.
Yeah.
So it was like, what was happening with Giant Bomb? Some people have suggested, oh, they just set it up wrong. But I mean, they had other games there before, previously, Super Hypercube, etc.
Really set that up wrong. I mean,
yeah, I know. I think they set it up fine because they had people there before with Super Hypercube, etc. on PSVR in the same setup, and it ran just fine for them. But it was just this stream now with their new review units in. It was a nightmare.
But I have seen some other negative feedback out there, not just Giant Bomb, but, you know, after I canceled the VR already, I saw like another review on it that was kind of negative in nature. But, you know, what's interesting, Marcus, we just had this conversation here in studio about reviews and how much can you trust reviews, right?
Well, so yeah, I think most of what I've been seeing has been kind of just average to kind of like, you know, maybe it's not the best thing. Like, I know Game Informers was kind of, it was a C- that they gave it. I'm trying to think of what other reviews I read. But, yeah, I mean, I just kind of go by you what we're seeing in the streaming. Because I think the Giant Bomb one, I think that they're pretty competent as far as setting something up. If they are having trouble setting it up accurately, then I'm going to assume that the end user is going to have trouble setting it up then if that's going to be the case. So I would take what, you know, their experience was during that four. It's not necessarily even the setup. It was just even the tracking on it is very obvious that it's not tracking that very well.
Well, let me ask you this, Marcus, because you sound like a VR enthusiast, you know, because you already have what Gear VR and Oculus. So you've already kind of put your feet in the water, so to speak. So I think that already puts you on a different perspective necessarily than where Loki and I are. But have you actually played PlayStation VR? Have you gone to one of these Best Buy things or some type of event where you can try it?
Yes, I've played it. I got to play it at E3. you know, pretty nice setup there. But I had, you know, previously I've had no problems with it. It's been fine. It's a really comfortable headset. I can't say, you know, the quality of the games were what I was looking for, but I thought it was just fine. So I don't know, could something have happened, like, between the development units and these retail units? Because it's like, I've never experienced anything like that. It's kind of wild.
I'm not sure I would let one stream have such an impact either. I mean, you know, with as much as people enjoy Giant Bomb or whatever, I'm not sure I would let one stream sway my decision with that.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just scared, like, you know, if it does require really good setup or
And what it is, it's a, what, $600 decision, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's ultimately what's making all of us nervous and what made myself nervous. Is like, this is a $600 plus decision. I mean, okay, you could argue, well, I don't have the Move, so it would be a $600 decision, basically. You know, and on top of that, the price of games. And so, yeah, that's, you know, am I wanting to pay $600 to be an early adopter on this? And I think I finally came to the conclusion that, no, I want to spend $600 to go to Chicago and see my friends. And I will wait and maybe get the VR next time.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm fortunate enough to be able to, you know, not make this decision be like a make or break, like I need, you know, this money for rent or something. I can afford it,
right?
Even though it'd be kind of gross if it's like a crap product. But I think at this point, I'm still gonna get it. So I don't know. I'll probably call in after I've played it, you know.
Oh,
so,
totally. I totally want to hear from our listeners
how wonderful or awful it ends up being.
You know what?
I mean, if I had the disposable income, you know, if that kind of money wasn't such a big deal, then yeah, I probably would still pick it up anyways just to try it. But because I figure a lot of that stuff's going to be patched out eventually, I would hope. But I just don't.
But at the same time, don't necessarily prepare for disappointment either. Although, I guess if you put the bar low, then you're only going to get your expectations exceeded. Yeah. But look at the, you know what? You're going to get to play Res VR. That's going to be fucking rad. Like, you know? But, you know, I finally had to answer that question that a lot of people have been asking me. Is Res VR worth $600, Rob? And for me, it's like, yes, but just not today. So yeah. That's where I ultimately ended up.
Yeah, I you know, I'm going to get it. We'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, I look forward to hearing from you again next week or the week after to tell me all about what I'm missing out on.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Marcus, anything else before we let you go?
No, that was really it. You know, just wanted to share my stress, I guess.
No, I hear you. We're all feeling it right now. This is the time. All right, buddy, I'm going to let you go so we can get some more calls. Again, great to see you at GamerX, and we'll see you the next time.
Sure thing.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right. Wow. We have a surprising number of calls lighting up the line tonight. I figured all the politics out in the world and just the fact we have a lower turnout than usual tonight would have scared people off. But that is apparently not the fact. So hello, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, it's Brad from Pod Culture.
Hey, Brad from Pod Culture. How are you?
I'm peachy keen.
Good to hear from you. What's on your mind, buddy?
Well, everybody likes cats, right?
Of course. Who doesn't?
And y'all like clicker games?
Yes.
A cat clicker game for you.
Uh-oh.
And it's on Android and iOS.
This is the one you texted me about earlier in the week, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Luckily, I've been so distracted, I haven't had time to fall down this kitty hole. Yeah, instead of rabbit hole, I did kitty hole. I haven't had time to do that yet, so I'm a little scared of this. But what is this, Brad?
And it's very appropriate. It's Politicats.
Politicats. What do you do in Politicats?
You're a cat, and you campaign, and your tapping is your votes. And the more you tap, the more votes you get. And it's just freaking ridiculous. Oh, my God, there's these power-ups. And you go from, like, being town treasurer to county commissioner all the way up the ranks. So I guess you can get president, but eventually it ramps up.
So you can go all the way from a mayor in a small town in Alaska all the way to the vice presidency?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
And you can see Russ from the litter box.
Do they put tongue-in-cheek jokes like that in the game? I would hope so.
There are power-ups. There are endorsements that you can get. And one of them is Catty Purry. Yeah, so you can get these different cat pun celebrity endorsements. It's
okay.
Funny.
I like that. Is this a free game, or where's the money made in this game?
There are some in-app purchases you can get, typical gems and stuff, but I've been playing it for about a week now and haven't had to put in a cent.
Gotcha. And are you still playing that nonstop night too, or did you finally give up on that?
In theory, I'm still playing it, but I've been distracted with this damn Politicats game.
It's tough when they put cats in it. It makes it very hard to resist, isn't it?
Oh yeah, and there's all kinds of cats that you can different cats that you can choose from starting out, and if you want to pay an extra $3, you can unlock Garfield.
Oh, really? They have licensed cats.
They have one licensed cat.
Garfield, that's awesome. And you too can hate Mondays and enjoy lasagna.
Mm-hmm. And there's little crap that you can unlock for the cat, like glasses and hats and stupid little furry wings and bubbles and all that kind of crap.
Can you get Nurmal, though?
Not yet, but there is a little gray cat, tabby cat type cat.
Mm, okay, all
you
right.
You have to pay money to get rid of Nurmal.
I'm waiting for it. Simon's cat. If that shows up, I'll pay a couple of bucks for Simon's cat.
No love for fucking Heathcliff, unfortunately.
Aww.
No, Heathcliff's just a Garfield ripoff.
Hey, but it had a way better theme song. All right, so Politicats. I will definitely check that out. Hey, before I let you go, I know you're a big fan of the Forza Horizon series, and I've been very slow to pick that up just because it's been a crazy past couple months, but are you enjoying Forza Horizon 3?
I am. I am a lot. I was lucky enough to be gifted a copy by someone who will remain nameless. But, I'm enjoying it quite a bit. And it's actually the first digital game, full digital game that I've got.
Hmm.
And fortunately, it's one of the Xbox Anywheres. And that's how I found out that my video card isn't compatible.
Well,
yeah, I need a DX12 compatible. But who needs it when you can stream from the Xbox app?
That's true. When the Xbox app works, right?
Yeah, the latest update broke it.
I haven't had that problem yet, but then again, I don't do that streaming a lot, but I was going to try streaming some Lost Odyssey to my PC so I could play it over there, so I'll have to see if that will still work or what's going to happen.
Unless you're on the Insider Preview Program stuff, probably not, but because I'm stupid like being on the cutting edge of stuff, I think it's just the latest Insider Preview up.
I don't think I'm on that Insider Preview. And I played like when Dungeon Siege 3 came out on Games with Gold, I played a lot of that on my PC through the streaming. So that's cool. Yeah.
I actually do a lot of streaming, even though it's just me and the cats. But I actually, because I'm in here in the studio so much, do most of my gaming streaming from the Xbox to the PC.
Yeah, same thing. It's weird because Alan and I don't usually end up in our living room together, but like we're in the office together all the time. So sometimes if like, you know, I want to hang out and, you know, we're kind of doing it, I'll play on my PC streaming from the Xbox. Sometimes just a little easier. Plus the multi-monitor setup goes a long way because I can stream on one monitor and still kind of keep an eye on emails or whatever on the other.
Yeah. Like I was going to try and play Forza while I was listening to the show. Okay, fine, I'll listen to OLR.
All right. Well, Brad, my friend, I'm gonna let you go.
Alrighty.
But thank you for calling into the show, and check out Pod Culture here on the networks Monday at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific.
All right, later on, guys.
All right, take care, buddy.
Bye.
All right, we'll try to squeeze in maybe one more call here before we wrap up tonight. Let's get to it. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, what's up, man? It's Kaijudo.
Hey, Kaijudo, my friend, how are you?
I'm all right. I just wanted to say that first caller, what was his name again?
Marcus.
Yeah, him and ActDev sound exactly like each other. I've been going back and forth with them in the chat room. Really? I don't know if you guys agree, but really? I think they sound a lot alike. I think you should have them on at the same time.
I hear some similarity, but I don't think it's as... I mean, especially because of the quality of their connections. I don't know how it comes out over there, but they have very different... I'm not saying one's bad or the other, but they just have a very different sound through the connection. But maybe that isn't as apparent on the internet radio.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, I'm just calling to say I am absolutely excited about PlayStation VR. I haven't been really paying too much attention to the reviews and who hated it, who liked it. I saw some people, like, you know, regular people, not anyone affiliated with Sony or anything like that. And, I mean, people have been, like, falling in love with this thing. I didn't even know I wanted PlayStation VR. Like, I wasn't like that in the VR. And I started watching these people experience it on YouTube, and I'm like, all right, I got to go into Best Buy, and I got to try this out. And, man, I was I was floored by this thing. This thing was so much fun, so amazing. I definitely want to get one. I was disappointed. I called my local GameStop, and they were already sold out. But I'm in good with the people there. So they were like, you know, they have a 48-hour policy that if somebody doesn't pick up their pre-order in 48 hours, then it goes up on the shelf. So they were like, you know, if, you know, somebody doesn't happen to pick up theirs, they'll, you know, they'll inform me. But I'm pretty much set for VR. Like, all I really need are those motion controls. I already have the camera. Of course, I got the PlayStation 4. So I'm all set, man. Whenever I could get a hold of one of those, I definitely want to get into it. I don't care about the wires. I've always been a wire person, so you know, like, so it doesn't bother me having all the wires around it. I mean, it's a great headset. It's a great feel. I haven't tried Oculus or Vive or anything like that, but I didn't even notice this thing was really on my head. Like, you feel it a little bit in the center of your head, but yeah. It's very relaxing. Like, I know people were talking about neck. Yeah, well, not with the PlayStation VR, but with other stuff. They're like, you know, your neck cramps up and stuff like that. Like, I can see myself playing this thing for at least. Yeah, I don't play games for that long anyway. I could see myself playing for like maybe the length of a movie, like an hour and some change, mm-hmm. and then I'm done. You know, like, I don't feel like my neck is going to get tired or I'm going to get dizzy or sick or anything like that.
Very interesting that you were really sold on. And it's funny because I was telling the first caller, Marcus, you know, I was asking if he'd actually tried it in person. And it's very interesting that you were really sold, it sounds like, on that experience. Like, it sounds like you kind of didn't know how you felt. But once you tried it, you were like, yep, I'm jumping in day one.
Yeah, they didn't have the Move controllers. I just played with the PlayStation. I tried out the demos. I did the shark thing. I actually knew there was a shark in it, but still didn't think I was going to react the way that I reacted to the shark. Like, it still scared me. Like, whoa. Because for me, it was the whole scale of it. It's like, you know, I fooled around with the, you know, with the phone VR, porn VR, all that stuff.
Alrighty.
To me, it felt like a Viewmaster. Like, I was looking through a view. You know, it's cool. I could look around. I could see stuff. But it was like a panoramic Viewmaster for me. But this thing, like, I feel like I'm small in this world. Like, whatever's supposed to be big, I'm smaller than that thing. Whatever's supposed to be smaller, I'm not. You know, like, I was literally the size of those things, which that totally, like, blew my mind. Like, it totally tricks your brain into thinking that you're really in these places. You know, and it's weird. Like, when you take it off, it's completely weird. Like, when I took it off, it was like I literally felt like I came out of the Matrix. Like, yeah, it's crazy.
All right. Well, that's I would also be curious to hear from you in a couple weeks and see if you felt it was worth what you put down for it and, you know, what you kind of walk away with from the experience.
Yeah, I can't wait. Like, I definitely another reason I want to get on it quick is because I'm a little worried that maybe after 2 years, like when they bring the price down, they might give you like more of a gimped version of the headset. And I want that particular headset. You know, I don't want like a watered down gimped version with, you know. Lesser whatever the hell they always do with those types of things. So I think this is the type of thing that you want to be an early adopter of.
All right. You know? Fair enough. Right. Fair enough. All right, my friend, I'm going to let you go so we can wrap up the show. But thanks for your call and your insight.
Yep.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That's going to do it for our calls tonight. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. But if you didn't get through, please consider sending us an email because you heard how empty the mailbag was. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com if you want to send us an email. Loki, I didn't catch. Is there any last-minute stories tonight?
No.
Yeah, there wasn't really. I mean, to be fair, it was kind of a slower news week than usual, probably with the looming releases ahead and everything like that. So a little bit quiet. But we'll probably pick up again as we start to get into the very, very, very busy month of November. Next week, I'll be coming fresh from Vegas, and we'll be able to talk about Final Fantasy XIV a little bit and how that was, seeing that firsthand. Who knows? You know, last year, one thing I was critical of about the event was that they could have used it as an excuse to show off some of the other Final Fantasy stuff. So who knows? Maybe they'll show off a little Final Fantasy XV on the side. We don't know. We'll see. But I'll be coming fresh from that event. We'll talk about that and whatever else happens in the news next week. Before we wrap things up here in studio tonight, I do want to thank everybody for downloading OLR or listening to us live, however you checked out the show. Please remember to help us spread the word about the show. A little word of mouth goes a long way in getting the word out. And yeah, we really appreciate all you guys. If you want to leave us a 5-star review somewhere on a site like iTunes or wherever it is that you found this show, that goes a long way as well. But you know, telling a friend or two about the show is definitely the best thing for us. So with that being said, final thought time. Loki, any final thoughts for our listeners tonight?
No, I just I don't know. We forgot to do FUs of the week, but that's not a big deal.
Oh, oops. Yeah, I totally did forget the FUs of the week, didn't I?
That's all right.
And I guess then, I'm having a pretty good week, all things considered. Yeah, so I don't have anything FUs of the week.
Yeah, I guess I'm still going to try to work on my game. At the same time, I'm working on designing DDR pads because I really want to build some new ones. This week's been basically just cleaning out the house, so I've cleaned up a lot of my cord messes that I've had that my wife's been annoyed by. So I did that. But yeah, I really am just trying to work on it. Just like I literally get home after putting the kids to bed and it's just, it takes an immense amount of focus to be able to work on my laptop while the TV's on. And then after my wife goes to bed, just an immense amount of focus to stay awake. And that's just not, I'm not winning that battle.
All right. Well, my final thought tonight is I'm really excited to go to Vegas next week, see some friends I haven't seen in a long time, and geek out over Final Fantasy XIV. Excited for other conventions coming up as well, including MAGFest in January in D.C. Looking forward to heading to that. In the meantime, a shameless plug for my Twitter. Follow me on Twitter, at Sky, S-K-I-E. I've met a lot of really rad people on Twitter. So as long as I figure out that you're human, I'll usually follow you back. Appreciate all those follows. And I guess that's it. We're done. We're out of here for the night. So we will see you in a week's time here with another episode of OLR. Have a great week, everybody, and good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.